Welcome to the 99th episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name is Quizmaster Lee. Today, me and my co-host, Quizmaster Mark. There he is. We're joined by writer, actor, and professional funnyman, Jameson Webb.
Hello.
Jameson, welcome to the No-No.
Happy to be on No-No, and I hope everyone is buckled up, because, and I hope your sides are stitched together, because I'm about to split them.
Oh, let me put my corset on here.
Yeah, get ready.
Tighten it up. Got to get those sides intact.
If they were previously split, make sure they are sutured together.
That's right, because they will be re-split.
Oh, yeah. God.
Make sure your knees are well oiled. They will be slapped.
We can't have any extra additional surgeries right now in this time period. Let's not split the sides too hard.
In that case, I will keep it to mild chuckles.
Good.
With the occasional gut buster.
Okay.
Good.
That we can handle.
You've been busting guts for many years in Chicago and recently in Los Angeles, but you actually grew up here where me and Mark are in Southwest Florida, right?
I did. Born in Fort Myers, raised in Cape Coral. Lee, we met in elementary school at Calusa Elementary.
That's right. We're both formerly Cougars.
That's right. That's
most,
right.
Most become Cougars later in life, but we were Cougars early.
That's right. We decided to get it out of the way early. And mm-hmm. And then, went to school in Southwest Florida, and then went to college in Gainesville, University of Florida, and ended up in Chicago. But yeah, I am a proud native of the Southwest Florida area.
Yeah, definitely. You wrote, I remember, an essay about growing up here, and I think you included some kind of phrase like shucking the horseshoe crabs right out of the shells.
Oh, yeah.
Or something. And that split my sides heartily.
Well, good. Well, you know what's funny? The thing about growing up in Florida, at least for people who don't grow up in Florida, is that there's this conception of, like, oh, all you do is listen to Jimmy Buffett and ride in boats. And that's actually pretty accurate.
Yeah.
it's not wholly incorrect.
Yeah, it's right. But Lee, I won't say the full number, but this, Lee, I remember as first or second grade, third grade, whatever mm-hmm. it was, I considered you one of my very good friends. And yeah. To this day, I still remember your phone number, what it was back in the day. I won't say the whole thing, but the last two digits, because it was one digit off of my phone number. So I want to see if I remember this 20-something years later. The last two digits of your home phone number was...
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Holy shit, I've just been mind-freaked. I was expecting to be web-headed,
like,
but
that?
Now... Yeah. Oh my gosh, my sides.
I thought I was going to do jokes, but I'm here to blow your mind with some magic tricks.
Gosh, you're...
Are
so
you sure
maybe,
this isn't Chris Angel?
I was going to say, does this play into your trivia at all? Like, do you feel like you have a pretty good memory in general?
Yeah, I think so. I was never good at science or math, like that kind of smarts. Like, I couldn't mm-hmm. apply it in a way of, doing like problem solving and stuff. But I was always very good, and still am very good at, history and culture and names and stuff like that. So anyway, I've been waiting 20-something years to confirm that I did remember your number correctly, and it turns out that I did.
Now, this is interesting, because we started off at the same elementary school.
Yeah.
And so that means we learned the same rap song about the presidents. We
yes.
learned all these things. I remember the president rap, but there are other lists that I'm sure we learned that I don't remember, but you do. You had another Medium piece that you wrote called Goodbye Chicago, and in that piece... you wrote, I forget, this is when you were deciding on where you were going to move to from Florida, and you wrote, I regaled the guests in attendance at a party with my tips for remembering all the U.S. vice presidents. Tompkins was sixth. He was no goon. And the seventh was racist John C. Calhoun. We just brought up John C. Calhoun on the podcast recently, actually.
Oh, really?
Because,
indeed.
He's one of two presidents two vice presidents that served under presidents. And we did mention how big of a racist he was.
Yeah, not at all a good guy. That's so funny. Well, vice presidents, I don't have them memorized. I had to look them up.
Okay.
But the hope is I can at least start some kind of, maybe during this downtime, maybe I can write the vice president song that helps kids around the world
Right.
Learn the U.S. vice presidents. I got to figure out what rhymes with Spiro Agnew. I think I can come up with something.
Well, that's great. We're going to post a link in the show notes this episode to that piece and some of your other writings as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But I forgot about both of those. So thank you for. I wouldn't mind to reread them myself.
You've written a ton of stuff. Didn't you write a Cheers reunion spec script?
Yes, I did that last year. I wrote a Cheers reunion special. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. A guy got a job on The Simpsons by writing a Cheers spec script once.
Sam guy was,
Smith? Well, is that his name?
Sam Simon?
Sam Simon. I'm sorry. Yeah.
This was before
the internet. He wrote a spec script of Cheers. Or I'm sorry. No, it wasn't Cheers. It was Taxi.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Oh, well, then never mind.
And then he sent that in, though. And that's how he got his foot into Hollywood, apparently.
Oh, man, that has not happened with me. But I'm going to start sticking my foot out there. See,
you already have a little bit. I mean, right after the Christmas holiday, you were a contestant on Jeopardy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yes.
That's pretty awesome. You're up against some tough competition. You had a church organist as on one side of you, and on the other, a woman who seemed to be plugged right into the internet.
I mean, they were both so, like, I've had people go on Jeopardy, friends that have gone on Jeopardy, and it's like, I blew it. I knew this, and I answered wrong, or I wasn't this and that, and all that. It's like, no, I was 100% beat by smarter people. Like, I got in third place and they were so smart. And actually Karen, who beat me that game, that was her second game. And she went on to win like the next week and a half. I mean, she went on like a little mini streak. She was incredibly intelligent. It was one of those things where like around round two, I was like, all right, the goal is to just not end up in negatives right now. Like I don't think I'm going to win, but I at least need to make it to Final Jeopardy. It ended up being a pretty close game, but that was super surreal. I've always loved Jeopardy and trivia, as I have no doubt you gentlemen and your listeners do. And I got out to L.A. and I was like, well, you know, it wouldn't hurt for me to be on Jeopardy, maybe win big and not have to, you know, worry about money for a little bit. And I did the test and then I went in person and then I didn't hear back for a year, more than a year. And I just assumed, OK, well, either I didn't qualify or they're going to say, he's an actor. It might be kind of weird. And then they called me and were like, hey, we have a spot for you in a month. And I was shocked and thrilled. And it was an out-of-body experience, certainly, to be playing it. But I was also – it's that weird thing where it's like you're a fan of the show and you're so excited to be playing in the show. But – so you have to kind of enjoy that. But it's also a competition. So you have to like be in the moment, you know?
Right.
And I think I was able to do that. Even though I lost, no regrets. One of the truly great experiences of my life.
So two things that I noticed. One, I've never seen someone – so excited about Poirot in my life. She just like went straight ham for $1,000. She just like, and just ate that category up.
Yeah.
Second of all, I've never seen someone who seemed just so, so clinical and so precise in answering Jeopardy questions, write down a impressionist painting for the last answer instead of an impressionist painting. And I found myself infuriated.
Oh, no. You wanted them to take the points away, huh, Mark?
not that bad, but I was just like, how are you going to be so just like, she was just blowing my mind at how much she knew.
She did it on purpose. Maybe it's a mind game thing.
Maybe it is.
For people like you at home.
Well, and it's also, so just to that point, in that final round, they tell you before you even get the question, if I'm remembering correctly, during one of the commercial breaks, you write in at the top of your thing what is or what or something like that, right? And so the only thing you're actually writing in during the actual answering thing is, you know, whatever your answer is. There's a whole crazy thing that happens where it's like,
so you don't know what you're going to, if it's going to be start with a vowel or not.
Right.
You write the top
that's what I'm remembering. So it might've been a thing with that. I'm trying to remember, but it is kind of broken up. It's a fascinating thing. I mean, they film it in real time. Like they start and 30 minutes later they go. They take, you know, whatever, 2 minute breaks, and that's where the commercials go in. But during the commercials, like, the producers are, you know, going up and just saying, he needs some water. Hey, this, that, you know. And you, when you write in your bid, your money bid, because they don't want someone saying, they don't want it, you know, hey, you bet $3,000. Oh, no, that's an eight. You misread it. So you write down your bid on a sheet of paper. They come up, they look at it. They write it down. They show you what you wrote and say, this is what you wrote, correct? This is your bid? You say, yes. They go, please write that exact number. There's so much because, you know, they want to just really make sure that they're...
No do-overs.
Exactly. No do-overs, no suggestions of impropriety kind of thing. So they're really on top of it.
It's a tight ship.
It's a tight ship. It's a well-oiled machine. And I was happy to just be a greasy cog in it.
Any tips for potential Jeopardy contestants that you would give as a veteran now?
Well, as again, I just want to be clear, as a veteran who got third place. I had read going into it, and this was kind of my philosophy, at least studying up for it. It's better to know. I mean, the key is it's not knowing a lot about everything. It's knowing a little bit about a lot of things, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was just like, okay, I just kind of have to, you know, trust that I just in my accruement of knowledge have kind of picked up enough things here and there. I tried to study some other stuff, but really it's just if you're lucky enough to be there and all of that, really throughout the day, they have you practice with the buzzer and buzzing in. And really find the rhythm and the way that works for you. I mean, during the practice rounds leading up to it, which was in the morning when they first brought us there, I was trying all different kinds of stances and ways of holding it and all this kind of stuff just to be physically in the right frame of mind for it. Aside from that, I don't know. During lunch, if you go in the afternoon, don't eat a heavy lunch. I mean, I just had a little bit of salad, but some people were like, eating a full meal, I'm like, I don't know how you can do that. You know, if you haven't
gone under
yet.
The lights and stuff.
Oh yeah, no way. And it's so bright and hot and all that good stuff. But yeah, so I was on Jeopardy. That was great. It was awesome.
But if people,
I was just gonna say, you know, it's weird because I know that trivia is so often associated with Jeopardy and vice versa. I haven't watched Jeopardy, Lee, because he is a man who loves to spring things on me last second, sent me your episode this morning to watch. Oh. So I was watching it while I was at work, and I was sitting there realizing, like, the last time I watched Jeopardy has been, like, the last time I've watched it on TV while it was airing has been over a decade.
Oh, wow.
And,
okay. Yeah.
And so I was watching it and I was like noticing, I'm guessing they must have a rule about you not being able to buzz in until the question is finished, because I would like see a question. I'd be like, oh, I know this, like, right off. And then it wouldn't be until afterward. And then I'd hear, like, everybody's just like clicking. Like,
especially
as soon
me,
as
I was hitting the hell out of that thing.
Everybody's just like, and then it'd be like, all right, Jameson.
Right. Like, and the key is, so you can't buzz in until Alex has finished reading the question. And if you buzz in before then, it locks you out for a few seconds. So if you're too quick with it,
it's like Mario Kart.
Like, I would say, Lee, to your question about tips, if you're ever going to be on Jeopardy, watch a bunch of episodes and learn the rhythm and the cadence of the questions being asked, right? Like, so much of it is just knowing, like, oh, you know, okay, and there's kind of a rhythm, and he might end it like this.
There's such a song to his presentation style.
There really is. Yeah. Like, I just watch as many as I could the month leading up to it, just to, you know, A, to refresh my memory on topics and see blind spots I had, but also just to get in the cadence and the rhythm of the questions and the pauses, and knowing that sometimes there might be a comedic pause, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So that would be
if he's reading Dr. Dre lyrics.
When the categories came up, were there any in particular that you were like, uh-oh?
Yes. going in, 100%. Going into it a couple of days before, I had crammed and studied, and I think maybe even the day before, I said to my wife, I'm feeling pretty good. If there are questions about art or religion, I might struggle with those just because I don't know a lot about them. anyway, but also there's just, it's such an expansive thing. And sure enough, I mean, the final Jeopardy was an art question, and I just overthought it. I was going back and forth between a few different things, and I just overthought it, but I didn't know it, right? It was just me trying to kind of deduce it. And I had two religion rounds, at least one.
Oh, yeah. There was, I think, a Bible round. And yes. I was like, oh, the church organist has got the Bible round. That's good for him.
Yeah. And so, yeah, those were the two. And sure enough, they came up. And it's funny, my episode, they filmed five in a day. Mm-hmm. And my episode was at the end of the day that I filmed. And I had, if you haven't gone yet, you're allowed to sit in a little section of the audience for the contestants and watch the other games. So I'd been essentially playing along from the audience all day, and I was feeling real good, and it was definitely a lot of categories that I was feeling really good about, and some people weren't getting them, and some were, and I'm like, okay, I think I can hold my own. And then that my game had, like, very little pop culture, kind of my strong spots weren't there. That's not an excuse. I think even with my strong spots, I would have been beat because I was going against two really intelligent people. But it was like, okay.
Now, did Karen, the winner, did she play the one of the pre-taped episodes right before you? Did it?
Yeah, she had just gone. I mean, you know, she
was. So you could go back to back to back to back to back and play five in a row if they're taping five.
That's right. And
what a gauntlet.
It
really
is.
And there's maybe 15-minute breaks in between. I mean, if you're making, that's the thing that I hadn't even thought about, you know, until after that day. For the people who go on these incredible streaks, you really say to yourself, wow, it's not so much that they were awesome this many weeks in a row. It's that they were this awesome this many games in a row on a single day with very few breaks. I mean,
it's built to run you down, it sounds like.
It is. It's an endurance thing as much as an intelligence thing. I really do think that for the people who go on, even if you win two games in a row, that is super impressive and quite a feat. So my hat's off to people who win a week, a month, all the way up to your, you know, Ken Jennings and James Holzhauers and those guys.
Well, for our listeners that haven't seen your Jeopardy episode and haven't seen some of the other things that we've posted, for example, we had there was a mention of the band The National on the podcast. Mm. So I had to shout out your amazing impersonation of Matt Burnington.
Berninger, yeah,
the singer of The National. It is just spot on. Marissa, even one of our listeners, Marissa, was like, "Is that really him?" And I was like, "No, this is my friend's Twitter. Like, check it out."
I tried to follow that up with a Jeff Tweedy from Wilco impersonation, which didn't go as well. And I think that's a good lesson of internet stuff is, no matter what you do, the second time is not going to go as well as the first. And it really runs the risk of looking very bad.
That's some wisdom right there.
Yeah.
That's some wisdom.
Find something new for the second one. But yeah, I love The National. They're one of my favorite bands. And his voice is so distinct. And his delivery and cadence and all of that. And I had not heard an impression of it, maybe because they're not, you know, known enough, even though they are well known, but it's
you're getting on the ground floor with that one. I think
I thought so. Yeah.
Too bad you weren't there to help Lee when I asked that question.
Yeah, indeed, really, I did not get that right. It was a series of albums, right? Is that what you asked? The band was made of several sets of brothers.
Two sets of brothers. Yeah, one set of twins, one set of brothers that had four albums in the top 100 albums of all time, or something like that.
Wow.
On NME.
I missed it. But as what I was saying is, if people aren't familiar with you yet, they can get familiar with you this Friday on Space Force. You're going to be on the new Netflix series Space Force, right?
I am. I have a very small part in a few episodes of Space Force.
I saw you in the teaser. You were well decorated.
Yeah. I was in the teaser, the first kind of trailer they released, the teaser trailer, and I was very...
You're talking to your dry cleaner.
Yeah, yeah. I was very surprised, just because, you know, obviously I know I'm in the show, but it is a strange thing where it's like, oh, hey, this is one of my scenes. They selected it. They selected it. I play an Air Force officer who is kind of working with Space Force and with the team at Space Force. And yeah, his name is Baxter. And I haven't seen the show yet, so it's very possible that maybe I've been cut out entirely. Maybe they changed my name. Maybe they changed my character. I don't know. What I do know is that it was super surreal. I mean, as a fan of The Office and as a fan of the different things that Greg Daniels and Steve Carell and really the
amazing cast
and team, it's crazy.
I was going to say, if there's anything you're going to get cut from, I mean, everybody from, I mean, John Malkovich, Jimmy Yang, Noah Emmerich, the late Fred Willard, mm-hmm. Ben Schwartz, Lisa Kudrow. I mean, like, if you're going to get cut from anything, getting cut from something with those people in it.
Yeah.
I think anybody can be like, all right, well,
yeah,
they cut me for fucking John Malkovich.
Right. Yeah, it was, I mean, it was great. It was super surreal. And, you know, I know it sounds like probably a bunch of, you know, bullshit of like, everyone was so nice and all that, but truly, genuinely, everyone was that I got to meet and work with were so nice and professional, but not in a conceited or distant way. I've been very lucky. I've only, you know, filmed a handful of TV and commercial things, and I've been very lucky in that some of the horror stories you hear about egomaniacs and all that, I haven't come across. If anything, people are so nice to you that you start to think, like, does everyone feel bad for me? You know, like, everyone's right. So nice. Am I the subject of pity? But no, it's
new guy over here.
Yeah, who's this guy? But it was super cool. And the fun thing, too, is there's a lot of people in smaller parts in it who are friends of mine from Chicago and Second City. And so it's just really, again, surreal is the word to keep using, because it is such an impressive production with such, you know, literally A-list talent running it, and me and some of my closest friends get to pop up and do things in it here and there. So I'm excited for people to see it. I'm also excited to see it. I have not had a chance to see it. I'm sure if there had been some kind of like premiere party, I would have been invited, but clearly with the way things are,
not the right time right now.
Not the right time for it.
But that's cool. We'll all get to enjoy it at home together.
Yeah. And also, and if you watch the show, What We Do in the Shadows on FX, in the pilot episode of the show from season one, I am the first death on the show, which is
awesome.
A badge of honor I'm very proud of. I get killed by some vampires in the park. So, so those are, you can see me get killed by a vampire or work with the Space Force program.
Oh, great. Yeah, we'll try to put links to all that in the show notes as well.
Yes.
Real quick, before we get off of Space Force, among your friends that were on the show and the cast at large, did you get a read on anybody that would be really good at trivia? Anyone in particular? Like, oh, this person seems like they know a lot about a lot.
I mean, I had very... you know, John Malkovich is so clearly intelligent, and speaking with him, he's so intelligent and so traveled. I you know, just in my limited interactions, it's like, oh, this is a very
intelligent
man. He
would be a trivia teammate.
I think he would be good. I think he would bring, you know, he knows about wine and the theater and all of this. I think he would really help out with some of the more maybe high concept questions, that sort of thing.
Seems like a lot of his roles, he has to read for a lot of them, like study. I don't know. Like,
probably. You know, I mean, he was very, very prepared on set. So I, you know, and again, we you know, spoke a handful of times, so I don't want to, give the impression
besties.
That we're buddies. You know, I'm going to hop on a Zoom call with him after this. No.
You know, me and Al?
Yeah. We only spoke a handful of times, but that would be my guess. I think he would be a good one.
Okay, cool. Well, we're going to give you a chance at some art history redemption for trivia here, as well as some pop culture. Don't worry. Don't worry.
Okay,
we've got some pop culture in there, too, but had to give you a chance to redeem yourself. But before we get to that, let's go over our weekly wrap-up. Yeah.
Lee, me too. Me too. What's that? I have some art history also.
Ooh, oh, no. Good.
Double time. Couldn't resist.
That's good. All right. Let's go over our weekly wrap-up real quick, though. All right, on Monday, May 18th, 2020, we had No Nonsense Trivia Challenge on Twitch. Quiz 35, we had Quiz Daddy Tim Peluso making his No Nonsense Trivia debut at one of our games, winning his first quiz participating in with 73,864 points, besting 23 other players. And for Quiz 36, our second quiz of the night, Grantastic Glenn secured his 11th victory with 115,221 points, besting 22 other players. Mark, how did your trivia go on Wednesday at Nice Guys Pizza?
It went very well. We had a little bit of a smaller crowd, but a very, very good crowd. I'm very happy to report we had a newer last winner as far as my trivia is concerned. Mm-hmm. The first round went to Peanut the Dog Doesn't Understand White Privilege with 33 points.
They've been doing very well lately.
They have, and they even won the second round with 51 points. But it was the usual suspect, Ian, who is a no-nonsense listener.
Mr. Anderson.
Yes, who won the last round with a whopping 72 points. He had a near-perfect last round. Yes, he missed one question. And did you see him when he won? Pumping his fists.
Victory celebration. Well deserved, though.
Oh, my God. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was
funny. He's been after it for a minute.
He was. It was funny. I told him, we're going to send you a gift card, but now that means you're going to have to come down here. And he said he already planned on coming down here. So now it's just a matter of time to get him come down here to do mine and or your trivia and maybe even get him on this year podcast. So very, very exciting stuff. Congratulations to Ian and all of his teammates.
Congrats to them, our other winning teams, and thanks to all for quizzing. If you want to play No Nonsense Trivia in the coming weeks, you can do so by visiting twitch.tv/No Nonsense Trivia, where we'll be streaming on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern. We're going to be taking a break this week, though, from No Nonsense Trivia on Twitch, but don't worry, you can play Nice Guys Pizza Trivia with Mark Davis on Wednesday at 8 p.m.
Yay, yay.
Just find the link in the description of this podcast or on the Nice Guys Pizza Facebook page. We will be back with No Nonsense Trivia on Twitch on June 1st, where we will be streaming our quizzes again on Mondays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch to stay updated on all of our podcast streams and events. Join us. Won't you? Sorry, James, I should have primed you for a little improv there.
That's okay. I was ready.
That was like the John, what's his name? John Cage 433 rendition.
Yes.
Just totally silent.
Just absolutely. Whatever the ambiance is the improv.
All right. We're going to take a little break and then we'll be back in round one with some trivia. Okay, we're back. Are you guys ready for some trivia?
Yes.
Are you ready for some trivia?
I'm not going to say yes again. He'll say yes.
I'm glad we're all in here. Because it would be a shame if anybody was like, no, you know what? I'm out.
Pack it up.
Mark's like, 99 episodes. I'm done.
Oh, wow. 99 episodes in, and there literally are no trivia questions left. We've covered every possible question one could ask.
I think when we started, I was afraid that might happen. But now that I've gone into trivia, there's no way it'll never end.
No, it's disgusting how it truly is the abyss.
Yeah. All right. So as I mentioned, I have an art history redemption question for you, Jameson. We can kick things off with. It's actually an architecture question.
Okay.
Here it is. Federal, Georgian, and palazzo. Federal, Georgian, and palazzo are styles of which type of architecture commonly used for public buildings introduced in the 18th and 19th century with origins in Italy and France?
All right. Now you and I can work together here, yeah. Jameson.
Well, let's talk about this. So,
yeah.
I
know nothing about this. So.
Oh, okay. I was hoping you would just be like, yeah, I know this. This of all the questions for Lee to ask. I'm sorry, Lee, could you say it again?
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Federal, Georgian, and palazzo are styles of which type of architecture commonly used for public buildings introduced in the 18th and 19th century with origins in Italy and France?
Federal, Georgian, and palazzo.
Palazzo. Right.
For usually used for federal buildings.
Mm-hmm. Public buildings.
Public buildings.
Public buildings. And we're looking for our examples of what architectural style that developed in the 18th and 19th centuries in France,
yes,
and Italy.
And those are all federal, Georgian, and palazzo are sub-styles. There's probably about 20 different sub-styles, but they're all in this classification.
Wow. I don't know. I mean, Mark, I don't know. Let's just maybe think of different.
Yeah. I mean, Gothic is a style. Modern. I feel like modern is one of those things that, or like modernist or whatever, which I think is one of those styles that was called modernist or modern a long time ago.
Right. They thought it was modern then. We look back and say, oh, that's right. Old-timey. But at the time, they're like, this is modern.
Yeah, it's modern. When was it made? 1854.
That's
like,
right.
What the hell?
Well, guess what, nerds? We're going to be postmodern.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was just, you know, 1890.
Right. No, was that? Okay, 1903.
Well, I'm also thinking, you know, thinking about developed in France and Italy, I'm starting to think of things like Art Nouveau, you know, just as far as like, name-wise, I'm starting to think of maybe things that have some kind of roots in those languages. Beaux-Arts, B-E-A-U-X-A-R-T-S is another one that comes to mind.
And that was mentioned on your episode of Jeopardy.
Was it? Oh, man.
That was the last question, Beaux-Arts. That was, remember, that was the what kind of art?
Well, to be fair, he just watched it.
I did kick around the idea of just asking you that question again.
Oh no.
I would hopefully get it this time, but also I would say to myself, no, this is a trick question. I know they said at Jeopardy that the answer was impressionism.
Right.
But this is a trick
question.
I'm gonna
go with cubism.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with cubism again. I think time's come around and I'm correct. Man, I don't know, Mark. I'm also thinking, you know, then I'm just thinking of just general styles from that time, you know, colonial and all of that. But, man, I don't know. Do you have a hunch or a feeling one way or the other?
I don't. I like the meta-ness that you brought up that name that was used in your episode.
Yeah.
But I tend to like that meta-ness and it never works out.
Right.
I tend to think, oh, Lee's being a sneaky Pete, and then he's not.
Yeah.
So.
Well, let's see. Georgian, federal. I don't know. Let's, there's also classic, you know, I don't know. Yeah. Gothic is another great one. So, you know, 18th and 19th centuries, that would be the 17 and 1800s. So I feel like that might be post-Gothic. So maybe that's kind of why I – and maybe like, oh, maybe it's not Gothic.
Federal – I mean, federal is such a weird name for a style of architecture. Federal sounds like a weird version of Gothic architecture. Does that make sense? It just sounds
But just because I'm dumb, I'm sure it does make sense. I mean, for me, it's like,
I don't know. When I think of Gothic, I don't know. When I think of federal Gothic, it just doesn't feel right to me.
It's a little stuffy.
I mean, I probably know less about you than this stuff. So don't take anything. Take everything I say with half a grain of salt.
Yeah. No, federal Gothic is like Dracula in a business suit, you know, it's
punching in.
Yeah, Frankenstein.
That's who we're going to get on the Supreme Court if we're not careful.
Right.
So glad to be back after a 2-month furlough.
I want to suck your blood and pass this legislation.
20 okay. more years of sucking blood, and then I can collect all my my pension.
Right, yeah. Nouvelle, I don't know. There's so much of that stuff.
Ooh, Nouvelle, that's French sounding as hell.
But it's like, am I just thinking of Art Nouveau? Nouvelle,
see, and that's Nouveau. The thing. I also don't. What the hell's the difference between art and fucking architecture?
Right.
You know, I don't know if I'm thinking of an art style or an architecture style. Is there a difference? Hell, I don't know. I don't know anything about anything.
It's also, wait, neoclassical?
That's a thing.
Here's why I think that. Hold on. Because with the federal building, you know, I think federal, I know it's not, but, you know, public buildings, right? You're getting pillars, you're getting stuff that kind of, I feel like, is a throwback to Greek and Roman.
Okay.
But it does feel a little newer, hence the neo.
It's also very phallic.
Yes, yes, which we know how America in those days felt. I'm feeling, out of everything we've said so far, neoclassical really... It dinged me. It really lit up something inside. So
Jameson has been dinged, Lee. We're going to go with neoclassical.
That's a big old ding, yes.
Yes!
Correct. Neoclassical Jameson. Is right. Yes. I heard you say you slipped out classical a little bit earlier, and I was like, ooh, touching on it there. And that's great. Okay, yeah, you're absolutely right. Based on the classical architecture style, Doric, Ionic, Corinthian, Mark, you remember these column styles? These are classical column styles. Based on the work of Roman architect Marcus Vitruvius Pollio from 1 AD, neoclassical architecture is defined by its adherence to Vitruvian principles. Those would be Firmitatis, Utilitatis, and Venustatis, and those mean stability, utility, and beauty. And the Vitruvian principles is where Leonardo da Vinci.
Da Vinci.
Lesser known Leonardo da Vinci. got his title of the Vitruvian man. Came from the same principles
got
and proportions.
It. Okay.
So neoclassical.
I know I never went to art class, but I know enough about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to know it's da Vinci.
Yes.
All right.
Da Vincio, I think, is a pizza place that used to be on 41.
Fair enough. All right, now finally, after all these years of knowing each other, you guys get to suss together.
Yeah,
here's your first question.
All right.
Cameroon gets its name from its abundance of what animal and an anglicization of the Portuguese word for it?
I believe I know this.
What are you thinking?
Well, I have a friend, Jacques Naim, who is a comics artist and writer. Well, he is a bit of an artist, but he's mainly a writer.
Okay.
And he is Cameroonian, and he's written a little bit about this. And if I remember correctly, they also, in my side research from trivia, I think I read that they have a big river delta where you would find crawfish, shrimp, crawdads, crawfish. I guess shrimp are kind of different, but crawfish, I think, is the answer. Or crawdads, depending on where you live. I think they're the same.
I like that. Thing. I'm trying to think, is Camarones, I'm thinking of that word, that Spanish word, if that is something. I'm just trying to think here.
Cameroon is in Midwest Africa. Northwest Africa.
But you said the thing about... crawdad and shrimp and all. I love it. Let's go with that just because I, you know, short of like camel, because it starts with the same four letters. I don't have any good thought out answers.
I feel pretty good about this. Crawdads.
That's incorrect.
What? Oh.
The correct answer is shrimp.
Oh, okay.
Shrimp.
So,
I must have just misremembered the detail. Crawdads. Tiny crawdads.
So, hold on, I'm looking this up here too.
Because the Spanish word is actually Cameron. Now I don't know. Now it may stand for it could mean both, for all I know. But upon looking it up, I did see that but they had an abundance of shrimp.
Okay.
And Cameroon was basically the English version of what Portuguese called shrimp.
I look it up. Camarones is the plural Spanish form of Cameroon, meaning shrimp. But but we were in the area. We knew it was from the sea.
If I was in Cameroon and I ordered some crawdads and some shrimp came out, I would be fine.
Very shrimp-esque. Yeah, for sure.
All right, Jameson, do you have a first question for me and my buddy Mark?
I do. Here we go. I'll ask the question and then maybe I'll throw in a hint if need be. But here we go.
Thank you.
Who was the first U.S. president to be born in a hospital?
Hmm. As opposed to the back of a Skylark.
Right.
Or a horse.
As all presidents are.
Yes. Yeah. Back of a Skylark, back of a horse, back of a, floated down a basket and picked up in a river. This was the first president. Obviously, they weren't president at the time because they were just a little baby. But the first president to be born in a hospital.
Mark, I'm going to guess that this is later than we would expect.
Okay. Do you remember the first president that lived in the White House?
I think it was John Adams, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
It might have been Jefferson.
I know it wasn't Jefferson. I know I knew that, and I know it was someone a little bit later.
Yeah, it was John Adams. But I feel like the hospital thing is probably going to be much later than that. I mean, unless they were putting up White Houses and then hospital next door, and then John Quincy Adams was immediately born. Like, just get it as soon as you can. We're still having – we're on president number four, and they're still being born every which manner.
Well, how much later are you thinking? Like, early 1900s?
Yeah, I was thinking, like, 20th century.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, thousands of years, you're not giving birth in hospitals, right? I think it's, like, a kind of a new thing in the grand scheme of things, you know? I feel that like people be would be more fine with like giving birth at home. Like, why would I go, you know, I'm not sick. You know, if something's wrong, maybe I'll go to the hospital, but I'll just have this baby here at home. But
I'll throw this out to help zero it down a little bit.
Okay.
What if I give you the birth date?
Sure. I mean, that would definitely help. I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth.
Or how about this? I will say, I won't give you the birth date. I will say, just because, you know, this president was born in the 20th century.
All right.
So this is a post 1900.
That was a good way to throttle that hint back.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, maybe not a little too much.
Yeah.
So we're looking around JFK.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's funny, JFK was kind of the answer I had in my head.
So that would be the 20s? When was he born?
I mean, it would be 1900. 15s?
How old was he? He was young. He was 35? Wasn't he the youngest president?
He was, but he wasn't in his 30s, I don't
think. He wasn't? Oh, that's just the legal age. I don't think we've ever had a president.
Yeah, No. He was the youngest president until Barack Obama. Is that right?
I feel like whenever anybody calls a president young, they're like, oh, he's a young president. He's 63 years old. He's accomplished so much in so short a time.
I want to say he was in his 50s.
Yeah.
And I want to say that if it was JFK and he was born like on day one of 1900, he would have been in his 50s. Right around the 1950s, he was assassinated, we know. I believe it was in 1957 or 1954.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something like that.
My grandpa was born in a hospital just a few short years around that time, after that time. So, I mean, I don't know if he never told me, like, oh, yeah, it was weird that I was born in a hospital. Like, strange.
It has to be.
People didn't do that. So,
it's got to be
around that time.
It's got to be him at the earliest. It's him or someone later. So, we're looking at him or. Nixon was
California. Tons of hospitals probably over there.
Yeah. Tons of hospitals.
We're the hospital capital of the world out here.
Nixon, where was so JFK was from Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Maine? Massachusetts,
I Massachusetts. Think. Yeah. Somewhere up there, God's country.
Who's got hospitals first, California or Massachusetts?
Well, I mean, I think they both do. I mean, especially Cape Cod, like where he was from, you know, like mm-hmm. rich personville.
I like how, oh, man, you had me with Nixon, but now, or with JFK, but now I feel Nixon is a good choice. What do you think between those two?
I don't know, man. I think it's pretty hard to lose. I mean,
I know we choose the wrong one. It'd be pretty easy to lose.
I'll tell you what. I'll sweeten it one more time.
Okay.
I'll give you the birth date.
Okay.
October 1st, 1924.
24. 34, 44, 54, 64, 74.
Still, JFK and Nixon, they have that quality where they could be like actually close in age, but look freakishly distant in age, you know? So, October. I don't know if either of those.
No. It can't be either of them because they wouldn't have been president. It can't be JFK because he was president. Say he was president at 50. Then 24, 34, 44, 54, 64, 74 would have been the year he became president.
Yeah.
So if they were born in 1924, say they became president in their 60s, like most presidents do,
mm-hmm.
then you're looking for someone who was born in the 1980s. You're looking at like Ronald Reagan.
How about Ronald Reagan then? That's exactly what I was going to say.
Jimmy
Another
Carter,
Californian.
Jimmy Carter or Ronald Reagan?
Carter had to have been born on a peanut farm, right? I mean, isn't that his origin story? he came out of a peanut shell.
He is still building homes for people.
Bless him.
God bless that man.
You
want to go with Reagan? You seem to have a hard-on for Reagan.
Let's do it. Reagan.
We're going to go with Ronald Reagan.
Incorrect. I'm sorry.
What do we got?
It was Mr. Peanut himself, Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter.
His whole origin is a lie. He was born in a hospital.
That's right.
Not a peanut.
Lee, I'm not letting you do this to me all episode, okay? I've let you talk me out of my first and last answer.
Did you really suggest Carter? I feel like that was a throwaway.
Did you not hear me fucking suggest Carter?
No, I heard you, but I just thought you were just saying like Reagan, Carter.
That's whatever. A suggestion, Lee. It's someone around that time.
Fair Jimmy enough, Carter, he was born, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, my research, it was in the hospital where his mother worked as a nurse. It's now been renamed. It was in Plains, Georgia. There were multiple presidents, obviously, who were born after that in particular hospitals. But in the case of, to your points about JFK and Nixon, they were both born in the 1910s. And were home births, but every president from Jimmy Carter on was born in a hospital. And honestly, I feel like going forward that will be the case unless we all of a sudden get a home water birth president down the road, which perhaps we might. Jimmy Carter also the first.
Hey, in this
president.
Day and age, we're all staying home and staying safe.
That's unless right. there's some kind of crazy pandemic that happens and everyone's scared to leave their home or something
right,
weird like that.
Seems unlikely. Jimmy Carter, also the first and to date only president to graduate from the U.S. Naval Academy. So, Jimmy C., baby, still building houses. God
there
bless
he
him.
Is. Yeah, very see? Good. All because of our wonderful system of hospitals.
Yes.
Who'd have
thought?
You.
Thank you, 1920s healthcare system, for... ushering Jimmy Carter into
strong young man.
Yeah.
All right, Lee, feed us, Daddy.
90s music is your next category. 90s
okay,
music.
All right. Jameson's
Which
feeling good.
Hip hop group featured the rap debut of athlete Shaquille O'Neal on their certified gold 1993 hit, What's Up, Doc? Can We Rock? Can We Rock being the parenthetical title.
How you feeling there, Jameson?
Not as good as I was when he said 90s music.
Jameson, can I tell you something?
Yeah, please.
I'm clicking my buzzer like a fucking madman.
Love
right now.
It.
As soon as that last word, I'm clicking so that I can yell Foo Schnickens.
Oh, so Foo Schnickens. That's great.
That came to mind. I thought, oh, maybe he was on some other album with like some other group, and then the Foo Schnickens came later. But I love it.
And did you notice that I wrapped clickin' and Schnickens?
I did not notice that. Very good, Mark.
That was as bout of a good of a rap as we heard from Mr. O'Neill himself. It was downright Shaq-esque.
Yes.
He just hit the scene, the basketball scene. He was getting all sorts of media attention. People were like, Shaq, what kind of music do you listen to? And he's like, I like Foo Schnickens. Foo Schnickens. And Foo Schnickens heard it, and they were like, Shaq likes our music. We got to get him on a track. So they had this track where they had sampled Looney Tunes, Bugs Bunny, What's Up Doc. Could not get the sample cleared. So they had Shaq come in, re-record that line, and then do his own verse. And the rest, as they say, is history. Because the Foo Schnickens burned out after one more album, but Shaq had four other CDs.
Yeah, he used that to catapult into the movies and everything. Shaq Fu
is based on Foo Schnickens. That's where that comes from.
Because I thought Foo Schnickens were just the group he formed. I did not know that the Foo Schnickens were already a group, and then Shaq came along, Shaq Fu. So I did not know that. It gives me more respect for the Foo Schnickens that they weren't just a backing group. They were their own entity that Shaq joined.
Yeah, they invented the concept of Foo. They all had Foo names. There was Roderick Rochford, who was Chip Foo, Joe Jones, who was Mock Foo, and Lennox Maturin, who was Pock Foo. And Foo Schnickens means unity. And the Schnickens means community. So it was a unity community, and Shaq Fu, which I think he interpreted as Kung Fu because he had a fighting game called Shaq Fu.
Right.
But, you know, that's the origin of
this
Shaq Fu and the Foo
Schnickens.
This is
the dumbest thing I've ever heard of in my life.
That's remarkable. I'm
unity
blown away.
And community.
I was just inspired to write this because I was thinking about my time with Jameson in elementary school and how we both had to have heard this song playing basketball on the playground in 1993.
And I didn't know what I was hearing. I didn't know the historic collaboration going on between Shaq and the Foo Schnickens.
What kind of music were you into back then?
Growing up, I mean, at that age, I would have been listening to whatever my parents listened to, which was mostly Wink 96.9, the radio kind of stuff.
Yeah. B103.7.
That's right. Before it became 0.9 and 95.3 WLLZ, OLZ, the oldies. So that's kind of stuff. And then I'm sure it was, then it was definitely like Disney soundtracks,
Yeah. But on the courts, it was What's Up, Doc?
What's on the court? It's crazy for as much hooping as I did back in the day that.
Just extremely large basketball shorts. Just very big.
It was the style at the time.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Here's your second question from me. The Monopoly card Grand Opera opening. It was either I believe it was a community chest card. In 2008, received a little bit of a facelift and was replaced with what card? The Monopoly card Grand Opera opening in which you received money was changed in 2008 to what?
2008.
Yes, they changed a couple things to update it a little bit. Mm-hmm. So in 2008, for what reason did you receive money?
I don't know that I've played Monopoly since a 1990s version, probably. Just whatever version is laying around.
Right.
Do they still need to manufacture new Monopoly games? I know there's like all sorts of spinoffs and stuff, but...
Yeah, well, I know they do like Star Wars Monopoly, and I'm sure there's like Game of Thrones,
But those old games get tattered and torn. Right. Yeah, the old ones get all torn up and stuff, and they want to update some stuff.
You got to get your $9.99 copy of Monopoly.
Yeah.
the greatest hits collection.
Yeah. Now that's what I call Monopoly.
They get rid of poor tax and put a pandemic strikes.
Yeah.
You lose your fucking job.
Yeah, that's basically what we got here. with this question.
Right. So here's what I'm thinking, Lee, with Grand Opera opening being replaced. Mm-hmm. It seems like they would say, you know what? No one really goes to the opera anymore.
Right.
But at the time, operas were the big structure, was the place where you went and saw spectacle. And
you got
now,
dressed up.
You got dressed up. You put on your, you know, you walk past some neoclassical architecture as you made your way to the Grand Opera house.
The Grand Old Opera.
The Grand
Old
Opera.
Split your legs bow-legged style and walk like Charlie Chaplin.
That's right. That's right.
You know, into the
doff your cap to the police constable and do all that stuff. So I here's kind of what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, was it replaced with something like a stadium, you know, like a football stadium or some kind of sports arena, which I don't remember in any of the other Monopoly versions. And it does feel like maybe that was their way of updating it.
So many sports, though. I mean, who would you exclude? You know, you could say it's the Super Bowl, but that's so specific. What if it's something like a movie premiere? It's just another theater thing.
Right, right. So maybe like, a multiplex or a Cineplex kind of thing, you know?
Well, I was thinking like a Los Angeles film premiere.
Oh, got
like
it.
Red
got
carpet.
Got
you know?
It.
It's
got
like
it.
You're going to the opera, you're going to the big thing. I don't know if that's...
Right, I see. Yeah,
too novel of an experience. Like maybe they are going for something more of an everyman experience. But that's an idea.
2008, it's I'm trying to think of other.
The writer's strike just happened.
Right.
The economy's collapsing.
Yeah, you're going to march on the picket lines for the writer's strike. I mean, unless it would. No, this wouldn't have been a 2008 because I was like, oh, maybe they did a, you know, Obama inauguration, but that would have been 2009 because it would have been, you know, the election was 08 and I don't think they would have done anything political. So I'm taking that off. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're on the right path. I like movie premiere.
Concert.
Concert.
We could go with the music.
Right. A rave.
A rave.
Let's go with, let's go with.
You went to an orgy with a famous senator and he bought you off.
Right.
Just another family game night.
Yeah. Let's go with.
You got your cock sucked by a famous anti-gay senator. Collect $300.
Grandma always gets that card. Let's go with.
Concert, I don't know, man. At least has a music connection, I think. You know, that's. I know it's theater. I know opera's theater, but I feel it's more people are going to rock concerts or concerts in general than are going to film premieres.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, rock concert, rap concert, you know,
maybe
boy band
go
in town. You know, maybe it's a concert. Let's go with I think concert makes sense with the idea of an update to music.
Arena concert.
Yeah, I
arena
like it.
Arena concert.
Great sus, guys, but that's incorrect, I'm afraid.
Mm.
The poor tax was replaced with speeding fine. Opening night opera, our opera opening night was replaced with it is your birthday.
Oh, man.
It's your birthday.
Wow.
Here's some money.
I thought it was like the office style with the paper on the wall. It is your birthday.
Yeah.
I'll understand.
It could be like that. That would be perfect for an office style Monopoly, of which I'm sure there is one.
Yeah. They already got the card.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. We really went down the wrong path on that one. But
I think we should be redesigning Monopoly is what I
was going to say. Honestly, I would say that you guys did a much better job of, you know, actually trying to make it, you know, to today's standards.
Yeah. I mean, it's like. Know. It's like them saying, you know, the new one being it's your birthday. It's like it was replacing an old one that was like, congrats, you know, you got a new fancy hat or
you
something.
Survived polio. You'll
make
it past 33.
Ah, you're hosting the cotillion, the town ball, you know. Is it my turn now to ask or is that right? Or who's
I think
turn?
So.
My turn? Okay.
Yep.
Here we go. Let's keep it with the game. Let's keep it with the game theme.
Okay.
The Milton Bradley Company was accused of selling, quote, sex in a box when it released what game in 1966?
I have a very good guess, I believe.
Okay. You can start the sus. Twister. I'm all ears. Twister. Ooh. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people just think that it's way more horny than it is. To me, it's just annoying. Being a fat guy, Twister's not my friend. But I guess if you're around,
if you're going through puberty, I get it. I definitely played my share of Twister during puberty, and I get it. I get this. I get the gripe. 13-year-old
Lee. Oh boy! Oh jeez!
Hey, what if we just played Twister like a couple normal kids would?
I got an idea. You can come over, and you and I can just play some 2-person Twister.
That is a great guess. I was going to say like girl talk or something like that, but I think Twister is like much more direct. The first thing that popped in my head was Operation, and I was like, really? No. Water on the knee? Sex
on
in a
the
box?
Knee. Yes, yes, we've brought up Water on the Knee many times before. Oh, this motherfucker's
like
got a broken heart. Are we going with Twister?
Let's go with it.
We're going to go with Twister.
Twister is correct.
Yeah!
Well done. Yes, it was obviously because of its encouragement of people to get flexible.
Human pretzel making.
And human pretzel making, and you're on the floor, and it's kid, you know, youths playing it. There were several groups at the time who complained that it was encouraging relations, and selling sex in a box was one particular phrase that was used. But, you know, maybe in spite of that, or because of that, it was. It continues to be very popular to this day. Unless you're Mark and you hate the game and find it annoying. I also was never good at it, so I hold no real affection for it.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes a product comes out for one purpose, and then it discovers an entirely new purpose.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
That could be what happened with some people with Twister.
It always annoyed me that you had to take your shoes off.
Yeah.
I never liked that. Yeah. I don't like games that tell me that how I have to dress. You know what I mean? It's like, if I want to have my shoes on, motherfucker, guess what?
I think house rules are appropriate.
Yeah,
I agree. Fine.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and we have some miscorrections to take care of, and then we'll get into round two of our trivia. Okay, we're back. Before we get to our trivia questions, we just have a couple missed corrections. Hit it, David Holbrook, times three.
Miscorrection.
Ah, nice. Super jazzy. Love that, David. Again, if you have a missed correction or a rate my question theme, you can send those to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. We'll put them on the show here. As far as last episode goes, Mark, I just thought I would let you know that Petey Pablo does briefly mention South Carolina in a positive light in the song Raise Up. It is not during the hook when he's talking about taking his shirt off and spinning it around his head like a helicopter. But South Carolina is given a mention in that song.
Yes.
So not totally absent.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
However,
did
I boff it up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got a Facebook group comment, and we also got a private email that I'm going to read here. Allison mentioned this in the group, but Stuart, you might know as Shrew from our Twitch trivia, wrote in and says, "Fellas, I've really enjoyed listening to the podcast over the last 6 months or so, particularly enjoying catching Lee streaming live on Twitch and playing along. I play under the username of Shrew, although I'm not sure I should admit that given my scoring average. Take my criticism below as a playful ribbing as I play the part of a disgruntled fan. The day has come where your podcast ignorance of South Carolina has shown to a level I can't tolerate. As a lifelong South Carolinian, I understand that South Carolina isn't the sexiest state to learn about, so I can tolerate a level of unknowingness about my home state. But this question has me in a tizzy. It also didn't help that right before this question, there was some celebration of having no missed corrections to read. Quote, what band, highly revered in the jam world, is currently the best-selling musical act in South Carolina history? End quote.
Yes.
This question was interpreted as, what is the best-selling musical act from South Carolina? Which I would argue is a different question than the question stated, but that's besides the point. I was raking my brain during the sus, trying to decide whether the Marshall Tucker Band sold more records than Hootie and the Blowfish, while simultaneously judging how much they would be revered as a jam band. I was shocked to hear that Dave Matthews Band was given as the correct answer. I'd never heard any sort of connection between South Carolina and Dave Matthews. I Googled, Wikipedia'd, researched around, and found no link between South Carolina and Dave Matthews other than sometimes they have concerts in the state. The only reason I can think of why this was given as the right answer is because Dave Matthews is from South Africa, and perhaps this was misread. I admittedly don't know too much about music trivia, as all this occurred before I was born. Nice humble brag there. It is entirely possible I'm missing something, but I'm really hung up on this. Mark?
Shrew, I'm here to tell you are missing nothing. I'm just a big old ding-dong. So there was a giant list, and of course this list consists of many states, 50 in total, and many bands. And I was trying to decide what band from what state I wanted to have in there. And between being not in a great state of mind when I was writing the questions and doing the podcast, I am not in a good way, right? Yes.
Okay, yeah. Just to be sure. Mark's okay, yeah. Everyone.
Airheaded, if you will. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge Dave Matthews Band fan myself, though I do revere Carter Beauford very highly as a drummer, and I do recognize... I do know all of the band members' names. Well, I don't know their new saxophonist names, but I know that he died in an ATV accident in like 2008. I know enough about the band to know, and I do know that they're from Virginia. But I must have seen Hootie and the Blowfish, thought it was going to be a funny answer, decided last second to do Dave Matthews Band and just kind of confuse the two in my head. So that was 115% my mistake. I apologize. I really have nothing else to say. There you go. Just a big old Zerbert on me. So sorry to lead you down a wrong sus. I really have nothing to say except for beg my forgiveness, and that's what I get for gloating about our perfection.
I know, and I just felt like, man, I can't believe I got one question right on this episode.
Yeah, it turned out to nothing to do with me.
And you know what? I should have caught that. I mean, I did have the thought, like, I knew that Dave Matthews was from South Africa, but I was like, they must be from South Carolina. Like, he must have moved there at some point. And Virginia is not too far away. I mean, kind of far away, but not too far.
And that's not the only place I fucked up with music. I also had two or three people message me telling me, like you mentioned during your sus, that the Scorpions are a German band. Mm-hmm. They are not at all a Russian band. And when you said you thought they were German, I was thinking to myself, like, that sounds right. But I don't know why. But again, I was not... if you heard me laughing about Oops All Berries being a hilarious concept for advertising, you can probably imagine that...
Oops All Zerberts.
Yes, yes.
That's episode 98. Zerberts. No, there's some good, everywhere. True, factual information in that episode.
Oh, there's loads of it.
Yes.
I just, for whatever reason, I was kind of doubting myself, but I was like, no, I think this is like a Russian thing. No, gotcha. No.
Well, thank you to Allison and Stuart True for pointing that out. Shrew also asks, but wait, there's another South Carolina-centric beef I have. And to respond to it, I propose a rate my question. We'll just do this real quick. What is the capital of South Carolina, is what he asks. Jameson, how's your capital's knowledge?
Very good.
Oh, okay. What do we got?
Oh,
The answer is Columbia.
Yes, that's right. I discovered that in trying to figure out this Dave Matthews thing. I was like looking at all sorts of South Carolina stuff. Like, they got to be from there.
I had a really good Dave Matthews joke, if I can just back it up for a second.
Please.
Oh, you know, when you guys accidentally missed that Dave Matthews question, looks like someone caught you under the table and dreaming.
Okay, this
you know
guy.
What I mean? You know what I mean?
Hello.
Yeah, that vaguely rings a bell. Is that one of the albums?
That's the third album.
First
or second. Yeah, it's one of the early, the big ones. The ones that I feel like... Was that sale?
That was the one with Ants Marching and Satellite and What Would You Say?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, because Crash was the other one, whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was long before their tour bus dumped 800 pounds of shit.
into See, the Chicago I mean, River.
To be fair, I can only feel so bad about confusing Hootie and the Blowfish and fucking Dave Matthews Band. I'm sorry, but you know.
As long as you're feeling the appropriate amount of bad for that.
I also have to miscorrect you, Lee, because earlier you said that Jameson's one of Jameson's people that he was playing against on Jeopardy played the church organ. He actually played what he referred to as the king of instruments, the pipe organ, not the church organ. The church organ could be misconstrued either as a Hammond organ, like in a lot of Southern Baptist musics, or the pipe organ, like an old school church. So it wasn't a church organ. It was the king.
I think he said he played in church, though, if I remember correctly.
He might, but he played the pipe organ.
Okay. Yeah.
Specifically. At he's church. Very proud of that. The king. The king of instruments.
I just remember church organ so well because as soon as he started talking about playing an instrument, I think I said church organ out loud. That was the only thing I got right on that episode, by the way. All right, let's go ahead and get into round two of our trivia here. By the way, if you want to write us with your own missed correction or a rate my question or even just a little no note, you can do so by writing to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or give us a call at 1-929-356-6966 or find us on social media.
I should also shout out real quick before my question. Seth and Mike C were both the people that called me out on the Scorpions and Wind of Change.
Good. Keeping them sharp.
Here is a little art question for you both.
Okay.
Jameson, I see you.
Maybe I can be redeemed.
Wincing a little bit. I'm ready, though.
Maybe. Artist Tiziano Vecellio was known in English by what name? Artist Tiziano Vecellio, that's T-I-Z-I-A-N-O, last name V-E-C-E-L-L-I-O, was known in English by what name?
Wow. I have no idea.
Vecellio, maybe. Tiziano Vecellio.
So it sounds Italian.
Yeah.
That might have just been my wonderful accent.
Now, you said artist?
Yes.
Now, you mean the world of fine art? You're not talking about a musician or anything like that? Okay.
Okay. World of fine art. Well, I'm thinking of artists with certain aliases. You know what I mean? Like,
does Mark know who Banksy is? Is it Banksy?
Could be, but we don't know Banksy's. Yeah. Right. Mark does. Yeah.
I know a lot of people claim that it's one of the members of Massive Attack. Because
that's right.
Because
it matched up with like their tour. Mm-hmm. Like they'd be in town and then like a Banksy thing would pop up.
I don't know if there's any truth to that, though.
Yeah, I think it's Ringo Starr. That just kind of He's a nimble little guy. I don't know, man. I'm trying to think, you know, so it seems like maybe.
Oh, my gosh. That calls to mind. I'm sorry. Another tweet of yours that I love, which is Bob Dylan introduced John, Paul and George to marijuana. And that's how they came up with the idea for Ringo.
Yes. It's fun for me to imagine that Ringo is just a fabrication of the other three Beatles that has taken on flesh and blood.
Oh, my gosh. Follow Jameson on Twitter. It's at Jameson Webb, 2 B's. Great Twitter account.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Man, okay. So I'm thinking artists. So you know, TV.
TV. TV. Television.
Television.
So there's Man Ray, right? That's kind of a weird name.
Man Ray, yeah. Mm-hmm. Could be Man Ray. Name. Could be Man Ray.
I don't know any of their, like, he said was, so that implies that they passed away.
Right.
And a lot of, like, the aliases, like, that people use today, like Swoon is a modern artist that does weed pastings. They're all still around, and everybody's got an alias now.
Yeah.
But back then, Tiziano Vecellio.
Vecellio with a V.
Chris Chelios. Chris Chelios. This is, yeah.
Maybe a, somebody with a mononym?
Yes. Now, I know what that is, but remind me of what mononym is.
Mononymic.
It's just one name, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, for
Tommy
example, Frida. I mean,
right.
I know she had a last name, but, you know, going professionally by one
right,
name.
Right, right. Oh, man. Although it's also like, did they, you know, is it someone like Salvador Dali or someone who just chose another name, right? You know, or someone who went with just a, you know, their name was that, but we know him as Jackson Pollock. You know, I mean, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of another option for a route to go down here.
Salvador Dali does sound like a fake ass name.
Right? Doesn't it feel like it probably, you know, Dali means like a genius or something. And he's like, my name will be Salvador Dali and I will have interesting facial hair.
And he did have a childhood that you might imagine you would want to create a new identity. Afterwards.
Oh, did he? Oh, okay.
He was
okay.
Raised to believe that he was the reincarnation of his dead brother by his parents.
Oh,
yeah. So
strange that his art is so straightforward, given that thing is his brother died in a melting watch incident. Okay. It's also like, oh, geez, is it someone like way back in the day, like Raphael or Donatello, you know?
I don't think so. They were like craftsmen and artisans, so they actually had to like use their name, I think, you know,
they had
to have some kind of notoriety. I don't think it was like a saint thing where they got renamed like, "Oh, now that you've painted the ceiling, now you're Michelangelo."
Right. Oh, okay. Yes, yeah. Michelangelo, meaning paint of the angels. Okay, I don't know.
Jameson, you may be interested to know that the T-2000 in Terminator 2 was heavily influenced by Salvador Dali.
Really?
Because he melts a lot.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I like that.
He's like, this is pretty cool.
So I think that's a hint that it's James
Cameron.
Turn
him into a clock. Yeah, make him a clock now.
Yeah.
Too far, James. Too far.
No,
that's like a George Lucas thing, not a James Cameron thing.
Oh. No, never mind. I was thinking of like the cartoonist, the guy that did Tintin, but that's not it. Man.
Man Ray, I thought was Spanish, but I'm not sure. I have this vague recollection.
I feel like of all of the different artist names that we've thrown around, Man Ray feels right, or at least
we both went there first.
That was our thought.
There must be something there. Let's see if there is.
TV Rays. Let's do it. Let's go with Man Ray. What do you think?
I'm afraid that's incorrect. It's incorrect. Man Ray. I'm a fan of Man Ray also, as a fan of the Dadaist movement. Man Ray was actually born Emanuel Radnitsky in 1890. And he is American, but he spent most of his career in Paris. The artist I was looking for was a 16th century Italian painter. During the Renaissance.
Michelangelo?
Named Titian.
Titian.
Oh.
Titian.
Yes. T-I-T-I-A-N.
Yes. Titian. Okay. Hold on a second.
Very good. Wow. You are really pulling the art history. This is like collegiate level art history.
That was...
I believe we discussed a question regarding Titian once, Lee, and I think that you had gotten it right, and that's what made me think that you may know. But
wow. How embarrassing. I've lost the Titian.
Titian. Titian!
Yeah.
I feel good knowing that you guys both know who Titian is, at least.
Yes. Yeah.
Influential painter.
Absolutely.
Okay, is it to me?
Yes.
Who is the only professional athlete to be named an all-star in both baseball and football?
Welp. It's got to be one or two.
Bo Jackson?
Or Deion Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Deion Sanders is the only person to play in a World Series and a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
But Bo Jackson may be the better athlete in both sports.
Mm.
This asking about All-Star makes it a more interesting question. I like this, Jameson.
Thank you.
I mean, you got to look at it like this. Bo Jackson was on the offensive side of the ball, Deion Sanders on the defensive side. It would be easier to get on the All-Star team on the defensive side, arguably.
Okay. I didn't know that.
I mean, you know, I just feel like offense in football, like running back, quarterback, wide receiver, is like the guitar of growing up and being in bands.
I see.
Everyone wants to play guitar. Everyone wants to play guitar. Everybody wants the girl. Everybody wants the money. You know, and then you've got the people who are more into it for like the love of it, who usually do all the grunt work, you know, offensive
the
line,
rhythm
defensive
section.
Line. Yeah, exactly. Those are the drummers and bassists that just get passed over time and time again. But I'm not bitter at all. I'm just telling you what I've seen through 20 something years in the music industry.
By the way, speaking of which, just as a side note, you should know, No Nonsense listeners, if you want to hear some classic Mark Davis music this week, not sure which day yet, but this week, go onto Spotify and look at the Anchorite 4 Deluxe Edition.
Ooh,
that will be debuting on Spotify this week.
Oh, and you can hear, and this is even news to me.
This is new. I did it right before we started recording. We're putting up some classic local music from Southwest Florida. Just a great post-rock record by the Anchorite 4, Mark Davis, and some of his bandmates, including Mike C. You might know Rumpelstiltskin
Mike. Michael Korax.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the Anchorite 4. Wait, you were in the Anchorite 4, Mark?
I was.
Wait, hold on. Did you play bass?
Play drums.
Drums.
Mm-hmm.
I saw you. What was the play? Silver Platter? Silver?
Oh, yes.
Their music
yes.
video for The Revenge of Max Fisher was filmed at Silver Platter.
Okay,
yes.
Okay. Wow, this
ages
is,
ago.
Yes. All right.
Well, nice to see you again.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Sorry, I just wanted to jump in. Yeah.
Oh, no, please.
Not only is the Anchorite 4 from Fort Myers, not only was the Silver Platter a record comic book store, movie store, Playboy magazine collection store in Fort Myers, but Deion Sanders is from Fort Myers. And could
he
that play into
is.
Something? Could
he
that play into
is.
It? Went
oh,
to my alma mater
man.
Of North Fort Myers High School. Me and Deion would go way back. Well, I mean, I'm aware of him at least.
Me and Deion. Can I hear the question one more time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Who is the only professional athlete to be named an all-star in both baseball and football? Now, to clarify, of course, football, it's known as the Pro Bowl, but right. just so you know, we're on the same page there. But this was both, yes, the only to be named an all-star in both baseball, MLB baseball, and NFL football.
Let's do it. Let's go with Neon Deion. Let's go with primetime. We're going to go with Deion Sanders.
Deion Sanders is incorrect.
Oh, it hurts.
It was Bo Jackson.
Bo knows. Bo knows.
I said I wasn't going to let you do this to me, and you did it to me again, and I let you do it.
You did this
I
to
let
me.
You, I let you,
you
push
did this
me
to
around.
Me.
No, you're the one there. You're like from Fort Myers, and I'm from Fort Myers, and maybe
you,
this is meant to be.
I said that based on you said that he, the offensive guy, gets more clout, so I was like on board with what you're sus. You did
fair
it to
enough.
Me.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, so to fill you in a bit on Mr. Sanders,
please.
Deion did make the Pro Bowl several times as an NFL player, obviously one of the all-time great NFL players, but as a baseball player with the Atlanta Braves and other franchises, he did not quite have that same success, at least to making it to All-Star Games Pro Bowls. But Bo Jackson made the Pro Bowl in 1990, and shortly before that, in 1989, he was an MLB All-Star on the American League team, and not only that, he was the game's MVP, so that's pretty impressive. He, the bottom of the first inning in his first All-Star at-bat, he hit a monstrous 448-foot home run And then had a couple of base steals, couple of RBIs. Anyway, considered one of the all-time great All-Star game performances. That is Mr. Vincent Edward Bo Jackson.
Great job. Great question.
Yes, indeed. Perhaps a misstep that Bo Jackson was not the roommate on the Netflix series BoJack Horseman, because then you could have BoJack Horseman and Bo Jackson.
Yes, it seems.
It's natural.
It's a natural fit. It would have made
his,
sense.
His name could be BoJack's horse son. And it would be all kinds of confusing.
Amazing.
Someone get Netflix on the phone.
Quick.
We have a pitch.
Monopoly, Netflix, get at us.
We got to pitch that. We also have to pitch my Hawkeye and Hawkeye idea, which is another tasty one. Yes. You can never tell who someone's talking about. You're talking about Hawkeye or Hawk Guy, because the guy just loves hawks.
Love it.
I mean, come on.
While we're on the topic of pop culture, I have another pop culture question for you guys.
Get it.
What three New York City franchises currently hold bookings for multiple events in 2021 at Madison Square Garden? Three New York franchises.
You talking about sports franchises?
These are three official Madison Square Garden franchises that have been named franchises by the venue.
So, Mark, I can speak to this, especially with that clarifying thing from Lee there. So we have your New York Knicks, who obviously are one of the franchises. You have the New York Rangers, who are one of the franchises. There might be a WNBA team, I'm not sure. But there are at least two non-sports franchises. I believe one is the Rockettes. I believe they might be doing a show at Madison Square. Because I remember this press conference because I believe the other one, and maybe I'm wrong, Billy Joel was named a Madison Square Garden franchise when he, when they signed him to do one concert a month for the rest of his life or whatever it is. So it's funny. I'm trying to remember that press conference, and I feel like it was like, not just the great, you know, New York Knicks basketball team and not just this, but of course on the performing arts side, feel like the Rockettes and Billy Joel were also part of it. I don't know. What are you thinking?
I feel like if it's Billy Joel, that he's being a dirty sneak. Franchise.
A dirty sneak and a sneaky Pete all in one episode, Mark?
Yeah, I think it could be. What about the New York Rangers?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely, you know, I'm trying to think of the teams that play at Madison Square Garden. It's the Rangers, the Knicks.
The New York Knickerbockers are definitely one of them.
Right. The Rangers definitely play there. I'm thinking the Islanders do as well, the hockey franchise.
Yeah, you mentioned the Islanders before.
Yeah.
And that would be boom, boom, boom. But if one of them plays upstate, which they might, then it could be a WNBA team. The Brooklyn Nets don't play there?
They play at Barclays Center.
Okay. So Barclays Center has them. No, please.
Lee, could you read that question again?
Sure. What three New York City franchises currently hold bookings for multiple events in 2021 at Madison Square Garden?
I mean, and let me ask you a question. Are you being a fucking sneak?
I'm going to let you give me your answer, and then we'll talk about it.
Oh, see, I don't like that. I don't like that one fucking bit. What is the WNBA New York team?
The New York Liberty. I think the thing that I'm kind of thinking ahead to, at least the way the question is phrased, is bookings for several events in 2021. And I'm trying to think how far in advance professional sports leagues, you know, make their schedule and book. You know, it's like, this team is going to play there, but as far as the specificity of having several dates
The regular franchises would be that's a little bit specific, I would say.
Okay. All right.
But there's a general handshake, like, we're going to be doing this, everything that we were doing this year, doing next year.
Got it. Okay. Well, then how many are you looking for? Three.
So he's basically saying that there are three teams that do play at Madison Square Garden. We know the Knickerbockers are one of them.
Yeah.
For sure. Especially, did you watch The Last Dance? Are you a basketball fan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, holy shit. What a great fucking series. I cannot recommend that series. I know it's a lot. It's 10 hours.
But it flies by. It's amazing.
My God. It's so good.
And the Rangers definitely play there. And the Islanders, I'm pretty sure, play there.
I mean, I don't want to shit on the WNBA, but I don't know that they have the amount of people in the stands necessary to fill Madison Square Garden.
Maybe. I mean, I'm trying to think. I do know WNBA teams have shared stadiums with NBA teams, you know, in the past. So it's kind of like, well, you know, and I also know, I'm trying to remember, it was like Seton Hall or St. John's or some school had its college basketball games. Their home court was Madison Square Garden because it matched up or didn't match up enough. It's also like the circus doesn't perform there anymore. So that's not, I feel like.
I mean, it could be the Knicks, the Islanders, and Billy Joel. But I mean, to call Billy Joel a franchise, I'm going to go off. I just want you to be prepared. I'm going to fucking pop off if you're going to refer to him as a fucking franchise.
Well, and I think in Lee's defense, they might have used that
I know.
Term.
And that's where it starts getting tricky. I know it.
So let's go with Rangers, the Knicks, and the Piano Man. What do you think?
You want to go with the Rangers?
Yeah, well, it's weird because it's like, if it's not the Knicks, the Rangers, and the Islanders, I mean, I thought the Islanders shared.
I mean, it could be that. And I mean,
they might
could
play just, Barclay, actually.
Well, no, I was going to say, I mean, you know, it could be that, and it could be just that you don't expect it to be two hockey teams.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, because the Islanders are kind of like weird. Forgotten, you know, because they don't have the kind of the history of the cachet as the Rangers. Let's go with those. Let's go with Rangers, Islanders, and the Knicks.
Rangers, Islanders, and Knickerbockers.
No, I'm sorry. The answer I'm looking for is the New York Knicks, the New York Rangers, and Billy Joel.
Ah! Oh, my God.
Go off, King. Oh, go man. Off, King.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if the Islanders – I might have just, like, just destroyed this question. I don't know that the Islanders play at Madison Square Garden. I was suffering over the agonizing over this question, and I think this is where I ended up with before we could record. Maybe I should have asked who was the first ever music franchise at Madison Square Garden. I thought that might be a little too easy for you guys. But
they play at the Barclays
Jameson
Center.
Jameson had the perfect sus, basically. He was announced as a New York City music franchise, and Madison Square Garden's third franchise in 2006, after a string of 12 consecutive shows, they were like, we got to get this guy here every month.
Got to lock him down.
He's been selling out. Fly him in
from Long Island. Mm-hmm. Get there. Yes, the Islanders split their time between Nassau on Coliseum in New Jersey and Barclays Center in Brooklyn. So they are not a Madison Square
Fucking
Garden
Nassau.
Franchise. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, December 2013, they announced he was the venue's first ever music franchise.
Wow. Now, Billy, here's what we want to do. We want to announce you, but we're going to announce you as being the next franchise. Jesus Christ.
I'm on board. Look, you guys.
Hey, man, how many zeros are after that? Five?
Yeah.
Seven?
Pretty much.
Yeah, okay. Whatever. You can announce me as your fucking personal dick sucker for all I care, for the amount of money you're gonna pay me to play Piano Man again, like, and fucking moving out, whatever.
Call me Billy Joel.
All right, here is your is it my turn?
Yes.
All right, here's your second question of the second round, and I made too many questions here. I get to choose. Let's go ahead and stick with sports. Who was the only person to knock out Muhammad Ali in a heavyweight fight?
Oh. No,
could it, be George Foreman?
My thought, I was trying to think of Foreman and wouldn't have been Frazier. I think it was, I know Foreman, I thought Foreman knocked him out. First, I was thinking Chuck Wapner, who was the guy that
became Judge.
Rocky was based on.
Oh.
Yeah, the Judge. But he didn't knock him out. I think he just went the distance, which is, you know, obviously what inspired Rocky. I think George Foreman, that felt right.
I just have this feeling like I remember being a kid and seeing George Foreman on TV and being like, oh, he's a grill salesman.
Right.
And like my dad being like, no.
He was a boxed. Brutal. Yeah, one of the all time great boxers. No. But he makes you can use it to, you know, cook vegetables. Yeah, George Foreman, you know, I mean, I know towards the end of Ali's career when, you know, he got beat by a couple of, at least one, I think he lost his last professional fight, but I don't think that was a knockout. I can't imagine Ali retiring on a knockout. So Foreman makes sense, and that was one of the big, I can't remember if that was the Thrilla in Manila or if that was, you know, one of those in the Rumble in the Jungle, one of those. I'm feeling pretty good about George Foreman, okay. Lee.
Yeah, I've, you know, no other sus other than it sounds right in my gut.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hate to sus away from it. Mark, George Foreman is our answer.
That is incorrect.
No!
Muhammad Ali has been defeated by five boxers. Joe Frazier, Ken Norton, Leon Spinks, and Trevor Burbick have all defeated him, but not by knockout. Only one man has defeated Muhammad Ali by knockout, and his name is Larry Holmes.
Oh, Larry Holmes.
The only man to stop Muhammad Ali, as it is put.
Hmm. Have you seen this footage?
I watched a little bit of it today. And it's weird, man. It's like watching your dad get punched. You know, you like
it doesn't
you think,
seem right.
You don't think he's stoppable, and then you like watch it and you're like, whoa. It's like watching someone punch God. It's like what the fuck just happened? Like, this isn't right. Muhammad Ali doesn't get knocked. You know, if anything, you go toe to toe with him and people are like, you just win for going 12 rounds.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or you just win for like TKOing, right. You know, but this man just laid on the beef. Larry
we'll
Holmes.
See if we can find the footage and put in the show notes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Check that out.
With a warning. Like,
yeah,
this is like watching God get.
Yeah. It's going to be like,
don't
a
watch if you're feeling
trip.
Sad.
Right.
No.
No.
Ali. No.
All right.
Jameson, how about a second question?
You got it. What 1984 action film was released in Poland under the title The Electronic Murderer? What 1984 action flick was released in Poland under the title? Now, obviously, I'm sure it was in Polish, but when you take what they had and translate it back into English, it was The Electronic Murderer.
Like Mr. Cat Poop.
Right.
Oh, which
as good
one's
as
that?
It gets. As good as it gets.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Mr.
Or,
Cat Poop.
The Sixth Sense was released in China, Japan, or somewhere as He's a Ghost. was the name of it, which I love. Just completely.
Why see it?
Here's the twist. The twist is you spend the whole movie going like, "Where's a ghost? I'm waiting for one."
Who's
then you go, "Oh, he's a ghost." Oh.
Oh, holy shit! This whole
anyway.
Fucking time.
Yeah.
Lee.
Yeah.
I would love to see the thought process of whoever's doing that translation. Like, who's gonna want to see this? Like, just put what it's about and that will make people want to see it, right?
Right. Titanic, the boat sinks. Okay, yeah. What else you got? Saving Private Ryan, they find Private Ryan. Okay,
ooh,
what else
I'm
you
in
got?
The mood.
Just bring it on. Just
this second movie is called Luke Skywalker's dad.
Right.
Well, that one, they actually worked. That it, the literal translation worked. The Empire does strike back in that movie.
Yeah, fair enough.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There you go.
Lee, what about RoboCop?
Mm-hmm. Oh. 1984 action movie? Mm.
I'm not RoboCop. Sure if it was 84, but it was around there.
Mm-hmm.
80s for sure.
Yep. RoboCop is, that's a great, I was thinking like that movie Shocker, you remember that? But that's more of a horror film.
That's, and that's 90s, like, I think. Horror. I mean, it is like 89, mm-hmm. if anything, I think.
Yeah, about the killer that goes, he becomes electricity.
Oh, you mean Transcendent with Johnny Depp? Did you ever see that one?
No, I didn't. Oh. I avoided that one.
Yeah, you're not missing anything.
Another thing I'm thinking of is Maximum Overdrive.
Mm-hmm. That would be the Stephen King movie.
Yes, it's a little bit lesser known, but all of the electronic items come to life and fucking just start killing people like crazy. It's like The Mist.
Original score by AC/DC.
Is it really?
I believe so.
Wow, okay. Say word. Those are my two best susses so far. You've given me absolutely nothing, so
well,
if you want to try them.
1984 action movie, The Terminator. Is that later than 84?
Ooh, no, no, I mean,
killer,
no, no.
Terminator, killer.
Dude, yes. I think that's it. I think 84 is Terminator, man.
RoboCop would be like robot police or something, robot officer or something like that. But The Terminator,
Terminator is a killer. I mean, mm-hmm. I was thinking RoboCop was kind of like funny and ironic because he's supposed to be a cop.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing RoboCop, and I don't know if it was RoboCop 1 or 2, and I wouldn't have remembered it when I was 4. So, I mean, that's, you know, mm-hmm. if we make believe that RoboCop 1 came out in like 86 or 87, that seems a little bit more realistic to me.
And especially after the success of Terminator. I mean, you have RoboCop after Terminator.
I think you're right about Terminator. I think you're probably right.
Let's go with it.
We're going to go with Terminator 1.
The Terminator.
That is correct. The Yay! Terminator. Yes.
See, it's good that I pushed you and gave you a hard time for not saying anything.
Finally. Yeah.
RoboCop came out in 87, I believe. Okay. But yes, Poland Markets released Terminator, the title, The Electronic Murder, and I believe it did pretty well there, which you would think so with a title like that. Who doesn't love mm-hmm. to see...
Give us the Electronic Murderer 2. Yeah, right. Judgment Day.
Right.
All right, Lee.
Inspire it by Salvador Dali, please.
Yes.
All right. Companies, products, and brands is your final category for round two. Companies, Oof. Products, and brands. Hedy Lamarr, Tyrone Power, and Bob Hope were all spokespeople for what appetite suppressant candy that lost popularity due to a public health crisis?
Give it no year, huh?
Mm-mm.
Mm. Appetite. Can you say that phrase again, Lee?
Sure. I'll read it one more time for you.
Yeah.
Hedy Lamarr, Tyrone Power, and Bob Hope were all spokespeople for what appetite suppressant candy that lost popularity due to a public health crisis?
Well, I can give you – okay. I know the name Hedy Lamarr, but cannot put a face with it. Don't know the other name at all. Obviously know Bob Hope. When I think of appetite suppressant candy, when I think of appetite suppressant... I originally thought MSG, but I don't know if that's an appetite suppressant or not.
Well, I'll throw out a couple of things that stuck to my mind here is... Sorry, I keep opening the door to let our dog in, and then...
She needs a burp.
Yeah.
What's your dog's name?
Boo.
What's up, Boo?
Boo, is she there? Okay, so here's what I'm thinking. So public health emergency, I'm thinking about like the polio outbreak that we had, you know, and obviously in the 50s there was... that's when Jonas Salk developed the vaccine, and so that was taken care of. I'm also thinking of... you know, Hedy Lamarr, Tyrone Power, and Bob Hope were stars of the 40s and 50s. So I'm thinking, is there something like, you know, Rolio or Poli or something like that. Just kind of one of those old timey sounding candy food things. I'm also just trying to think of public health emergencies that would have been in their time period.
Lee, is this something that you know we know the name of out of curiosity?
I have no idea if you know the name of this.
Okay.
Just, yeah, I'll throw that out there.
Well, I was just curious because like sometimes like what will happen is like it'll be like Altoids, where it was originally like supposed to be an Altoid, like an appetite suppressant. And then like they'll be like, oh, oops, we fucked up. Oops, all berries. And then they'll be like, they'll put Altoids back out as not without fucked up stuff in it.
Man, I mean, oops, obviously
no more breath strips.
Well, I mean, Jameson, I think maybe part of the sus here is, and I don't know if neither of us just know the name of it, I don't know that we're going to be able to really get it. I think this is kind of one of those, you know it or you don't. Mm-hmm. But I think the fact that it's an appetite suppressant and it's related to a health scare might very well be connected. So, you know, some kind of health scare from the 40s, 50s, or 60s that would be related to an appetite suppressant.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm, like, so... Mm-hmm. You know, you're taking an appetite suppressant and then, oh, this also like kind of like how Olean was supposed to like do blah, blah, blah. And then it also made your fucking shit watery and you'd have anal leakage.
Right.
And it was like, oh, oops, I crapped my pants.
Right.
But these chips taste great.
Yeah. You can use the bag as a diaper. so let's see. I don't know. That's the thing. I mean, I'm trying to think of. Yeah. You know, obviously we're in the middle of one, but I'm trying to think of other public health emergencies that.
Yeah. And a candy that would, you know, and the name of a candy that is not out anymore, probably.
Right. Right. Man,
maybe it was like Werther's Unoriginals. Maybe it was like an offshoot of Werther's.
Oh,
Unwerther.
It's like they did like Werther's new. And they're like, oh, no, these are the Werther's Originals. They aren't the ones that make your fucking stomach turn into gas.
Yeah, yeah. Gas suppressant. Well, what are Beano? I'm just trying to think of things that – I know it's not a suppressant, but I'm just trying to think of things that
I mean, appetite suppressants, I feel like, you know, even like things like cocaine and stuff like that were considered appetite suppressants.
Right.
You know what I mean? It could be something like that. Oh, try new Coke drops, you know, you know, whatever. It's like pure cocaine. It's like, geez, I don't want to fucking eat it all. And you're like you're running around.
Right.
Punching yourself in the balls. I just want to scratch my teeth.
Yeah.
I don't want to eat it all.
I mean, what the hell would the name of the candy be? I just don't feel
I know that's
the
thing
to...
especially let's toss out just an old candy thing that we've heard of and hope that that somehow
all right
work backwards. Quaaludes.
Quaaludes. Yummy.
I'm sorry. It's not Quaaludes, guys.
Oh, no.
Quaaludes.
The answer that I'm looking for is a candy that was called AIDS. AYDS. AIDS.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's actually came out of Chicago. A Chicago company introduced this in the late 30s. And using benzos to try and like make it so your taste buds wouldn't work, so maybe that would stop you from eating if you didn't taste food anymore. And then they later replaced it with Fen-Phen, and that's when all of these celebrities, Hedy Lamarr, you might know, not only an actress, Mark, but I think helped develop Wi-Fi, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's got some crossover talent there. In the 80s, the AIDS crisis hit, and the company that was enjoying two decades worth of popular sales in the 70s and 80s under AIDS could no longer market their product under that name. So they actually sold the name. Man. I'm sorry. First, they tried a year under Diet AIDS. That was the name,
Jesus
the rebrand
Christ.
That they came up with.
This disease that makes people skinny.
Exactly.
Yeah, call it Diet AIDS. Great.
So they gave up after a year of that, and they sold it to another company called the DEP Corporation that tried one last time by rebranding it Aid Slim.
Like, oh my God.
Maybe let's just try and make it one word and put something in it.
That is so sad in so many ways.
Can you imagine being that CEO and hearing them being like, we're calling it the autoimmune deficiency syndrome, and be like, no, 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 no. And they're like, or, and you're like, and they're like, AIDS. And you're like, fuck, my empire.
Notice the why. Notice the why.
That's wild. It's like, I mean, that's like when you see all those old cigarette ads of, you know, celebrity smoking, and you're just like, oh, what we know today, you know, just in a different way. But it's just like, you see it and you're just like, that's so, I'm surprised I haven't seen some of
the
these
best things come in cellophane, and it's like a stork with a plastic bag and a baby inside.
Right, right. And you're like, oh, what a simpler time, I guess. I don't know. That's
Lee
wild.
Jameson, we're all intelligent young chaps. I say that we try and buy the rights for AIDS from the last company that had it, and try and rebrand it as Oops All AIDS. And see if we can't bring this sucker back to life.
I think maybe we buy it and it's we take a cue from Terminator, and it's just the electronic dietitian or something.
There you go.
It's just people are like, is there electricity in these tablets? I don't know. You'll have to take it. See what happens.
Send it to Poland. Send it to Poland. You know, see what the writers over there can come up with.
Maybe the dietitian killer. Maybe that would be a better.
There you go. Also, my new crime novel coming out this fall on Simon & Schuster, The Dietitian Killer. He'll help you lose weight forever.
Yes, there you go. You can't gain weight if you're not alive.
That's right. Coming soon to Lifetime.
All right. Ready for a break, Lee?
Let's do it. Let's take one last break, and then we've got one Rate My Question to get through, and then our final questions of the quiz. Okay, we're back. Before we get to our last questions, we do have time for one Rate My Question. All right, we have a Rate My Question from Joey, our friend Joey.
Ah, yes.
Friend and former guest on the Facebook group. Joey posted a link to a Imgur album that was historical in nature, of course, dealing with boats. As we know, her and Tim, big fans of boats. And she wrote, I tried to think of a way to create a question from the story, but it is so esoteric and there are so many details. Anyway, I hope you trivia nerds enjoy this. Before we get to that, though, Jameson, you freelance write trivia questions.
That's correct. Yeah, that's my in-between acting gigs passion.
Mm-hmm. Do you do it every week? Are you constantly writing? Is it a constant thing, or is it just kind of like you go back and dip for a little bit?
No, it's pretty constant. You know, I've had through like various freelancing sites, I've gotten attached to a couple of clients, and they do a pub quiz thing. They have a company and they do different things. I honestly don't know too much about it, except they say, hey, we need this amount of questions per week. And they let me pretty much come up with the categories and all that. And I try to kind of hit that sweet spot of, you know, some easy ones, some hard ones, all that. But it's been great. I've learned a bunch of random things about random things, which, as we know, is one of the great things about trivia, is a lot of, moments, you know, and it's fun to share those with people. Yeah,
absolutely.
So do you have primarily one client, or do you work with multiple companies?
For off and on, it's been several clients, but pretty much it's been one main one for the last couple of years. And and I think they're doing virtual right now. I think they're based in Canada. So, but it's been fun. I mean, it's been an interesting, I also try to not, you know, I never repeat questions. I really try not to repeat even categories, but as you know, that can be tough sometimes. But yeah, I've learned so much about bad fast food campaigns and vice presidents and state flags and all that stuff more than I ever thought I would have.
Right on. Well, we're gonna ask your expertise here. I tried to construct a question for Joey based on the Imgur album that she posted. There was 5 or 6 different slides and maybe a paragraph under each detailing what was going on in the picture. This is the question that I came up with. Mark, did you see the answer to this? Do you remember what it's called? What these ships are called? That's generally what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here's the question. Built by the Roman Emperor Caligula in the 1st century AD, what pair of palatial ships were recovered via lake drainage at the director of dictator Benito Mussolini and were housed in a purpose-built museum until a fire consumed it and its contents during World War II? That's like covers 2,000 years of history.
Right, yeah.
That gives you everything. That it's one of those... I think it's a great question. I have no idea what the answer is, but...
Now, yeah, I mean, I think it is a great question. And, you know, this reminds me of the question that we were just... that Jameson and I were just sussing with the candy, which there are some questions that are unsussable.
Yep.
There are some that you just know the answer to or you don't.
Right.
If you don't know that a candy named AIDS existed, you're almost 99% shit out of luck. When I first was reading that, you know, I was seeing, you know, mention of Caligula, you know, where you could make that, you know, which Roman emperor, you know, ordered these ships, where all, if you know Roman emperors, then you've got some chance. You know, and even more so if you say give some date. Now, I mean, that wouldn't necessarily help me because I don't know when Caligula ruled.
Right.
But I mean, from there, you can just give more or less information depending on how hard or easy you want to make it. What Roman emperor who made his horse a senator, you know, well, that's,
of course,
you know, then you're going to know.
Is that true? Did a Roman emperor do that?
Caligula.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He was crazy.
He was absolutely insane. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was played in a Penthouse movie by Malcolm McDowell, actually.
I've heard of this infamous production which walks the line between erotica and
erotica. And straight up porn. Right. But I mean, you know, there are definitely questions where you could ask something where the answer is Benito Mussolini or something where the answer is Caligula. Asking for the name of the ships, good fucking luck. I mean,
I definitely feel you on that. The only thing that I could probably add to this that might help is that the ships were named after the lake where they were drained from. But again, if you don't know it, you don't know it. And maybe, you know, changing out some of the cogs and having Caligula be the answer would be a way to make this easier.
Right.
I feel like the easiest version of this question would be, you know, one where you, you know, in 19, whatever, what Italian dictator ordered, blah, blah, blah. Cause that's the easiest. Cause you go, well, the Italian dictator everyone knows is Mussolini. Right. And then the next one I think is, the Caligula, you know, which emperor, you know, maybe you could do, you know, if you knew the year, you know, a few years after appointing his horse to the Senate, which Roman emperor also ordered the, you know, these ships to be built or whatever there the case go. Is, right?
Some or kind of possibly, or, right. Or possibly Caligula ordered what kind of, you know, what thing to be built that was uncovered later on by Benito Mussolini, where it could be a house, it could be this, it could be that. All these are something where it's like, in your imagination, you know, there is a finite amount of things that could be built and recovered later on, or only a certain amount of Italian dictators or Roman emperors or whatever that you know. When you're like, what's the name of this thing? You're getting into 8-point territory, buddy. Like, when you're talking about, like, some fucking weird two-ship vessel thing, blah, 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 it's like, you either know it, or you're fucked. You know, like, that's pretty much it.
Right. So if there's any marks against my question, it might be that it's too difficult.
Yeah, but as far as trying to make that the answer, you nail. I mean,
it was
beautifully crafted.
That was the best version. Yeah.
Thank you so much, guys. And Joey, hope you enjoyed that. And we'd love to hear some more Rate My Questions from you, and as well as our other listeners. Just send us an email at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com, or find us on social media, or call us 1-929-3329-6966. And we
just
ramble
it off numbers.
I am. I think that's the right number.
1-800-454-4933.
They'll figure it out. They'll find the number. They'll figure it out.
He's using the phonetic alphabet. Alpha Romero. People are like, what the fuck is going on?
Jameson, would you like to kick off our last round of questions?
Would love to. Here you go. Who is the only Saturday Night Live cast member to have been a musical guest and a host prior to becoming a cast member?
Ooh, this is interesting. Okay, can you read that one more time?
Absolutely. Who is the only Saturday Night Live cast member to have been a musical guest and a host on the show prior to becoming a cast member? Certainly, cast members have come back to host. Certainly, musical guests have hosted and all that kind of stuff. But this one entertainer holds this one performer, comedian, whatever, holds the distinction of having been a musical guest and a host prior to becoming a cast member.
Lee, you look awfully calm.
Unlike you look very nervous. You're shaken.
Well, I will tell you this, Jameson. We just had. Did you know Justin Peterson?
Are you familiar?
No, no. I don't think so. But
you'd like him. He was just on our show two episodes ago.
Illustrator, former Mad Magazine illustrator.
Oh, cool.
Comic artist. Yeah, okay. And he brought a running theme with him that was 100% Saturday Night Live questions.
Oh wow! Oh, that would have been so fun. Yeah.
Yeah. That's episode 97. In case you're curious,
I'm gonna check that out.
Yeah. All questions about Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm. Mark, let's start sussing here. Here's my volley, my first volley. Who had a pop career and was also a funny individual in the 80s? That would be Eddie Murphy. Now, did Eddie Murphy's pop career come after he was on SNL? I know, didn't Quincy Jones produce some of his music?
When was he on Saturday Night Live?
80s, mid 80s, generally, maybe late 80s, mid to late 80s.
Oh man, he did.
I feel like some other musical acts like Adam Sandler probably owe some of their
party all the time, all the time,
exactly,
party all the time. But he's saying that he was this person was a musical guest
and a host before a cast member.
Before being a cast member, I don't think that's Eddie Murphy. A cast member?
I love it. I love going in this direction. I'm not above being a cast member on SNL, even though I'm already a musician and I can host it. Like, I'll join the cast. I love that attitude.
Jameson, a weird question, and I don't know if you can answer this or not. So if not, just tell me to fuck myself. But were they the named musician or did they just play? Like, were they part of a band or...
I will answer this. I will answer this. They were part of a band, but it wasn't a case where like they were just a person on keyboards backing up, you know, Diana Ross or something. They were in a band. They were a member of a band that performed on the show.
So it wasn't necessarily like Justin Timberlake. It could have been. I was thinking like, because one of my first people I thought about was Fred Armisen. Now, I don't know if he was a host before, if he was famous before he was on. But like, I know he's a drummer. Wouldn't it be curious if he played drums on something and then hosted and then ended up as a cast member?
The music thing I can see working with that, but I don't think he could host before being on this. And same with Adam Sandler. I feel like he probably owes some popularity to Saturday Night Live.
This is going to be maybe the stupidest question I've ever asked in my life. So strap yourself in. Paul Simon was never a cast member, was he? We know that he was with our conversation host with Justin. He was the first host. Got that out of the way real quick. Yep. Probably did music on the show very fast.
Simon and Garfunkel.
So all he had to do was be a cast member for some amount of time.
Paul Simon, a cast member of Saturday Night Live?
It sounds stupid. That just sounds absurd. I know.
That sounds absurd.
I know it does.
Wasn't Chevy Chase and Steely Dan?
Yes.
Did Steely Dan pull?
Not when they were like on Saturday Night Live.
And Chevy was so early too on Saturday Night Live.
Would you like me to guide you in any certain directions here a little bit?
I would appreciate some guidance. Yeah, why not?
So this is a tough one. I would say, just to kind of clarify this or to maybe point you in the direction. First, this is not someone who we generally think of as being an SNL cast member. Now, they were on the show for two seasons, but this isn't, and this person's very talented. This is not any reflection on this person's talent. But when we think of your SNL echelon, this person generally isn't thought of in this regard. I will give you one more thing. For now, 10 years they hosted the show and were a musical guest or part of the musical guest in the same season, different episodes, but the same season. 10 years later, they joined the cast.
Hmm.
It's a tough one. It's a very, yeah. If you're an SNL fan, like super fan, this is a very tough one. So I apologize, but I,
no, don't apologize. But
it's interesting to me.
You know, let me tell you, Jameson, I've caught a lot of flack in the past for having hard questions, but I've always said, in my opinion, even if you walk away not having won, if you walk away knowing something new knowing something like this, I live for this shit.
That's how I feel.
I don't win, whatever, as long as I was able to like put in my best or whatever.
Yeah.
And as long as maybe not every question is like near impossible. Yeah, but yeah. Like, I love this shit. I'm going to never forget this fucking information right here.
What was that last hint you gave? They joined 10 years after their first...
Yeah, so they hosted the show and were the musical guest or part of the musical guest in two different episodes, but in the same season.
Okay.
10 years later, they joined the cast and they were with the cast for a couple of years.
In the cast for 2 years.
Yeah.
I'm just going through like the cast member title cards and all of the people at the end that are only there for like 2 years. And you're like, oh, or, you know, a short amount of time. And you're like, oh, I had no idea they were on SNL. I totally forgot that. Yeah. Or
I'm also trying to think 70. They'd be in the 70s and then join in the 80s or be in the 80s and join in the 90s or have like been in the hosted in the 90s and then have joined in the 2000s.
It was in the 80s. The first they hosted and were musical guests in the 80s. They joined in the 90s. I will zero you in a bit more.
Is it somebody from Christopher Guest's world? Is this a Spinal Tap figure?
Oh, that's interesting.
I would say you're definitely on the very right path there.
So it could be.
Michael
McDonald? Is that his name?
I think you're thinking of, Michael McKean?
Michael McKean.
I think he may have been on SNL for a short time.
Uh-huh.
Is that the official answer?
Mark, let's do it.
We're going to do it.
Michael McKean.
You are correct.
All right.
It is the great Michael McKean. Great sus in there.
We couldn't have done it without those hints, though.
Well, that's okay. It's a tough one.
Those were good hints, though. Good hints.
So in 1980, so obviously Michael McKean, you know, was on Laverne and Shirley, was, you know, had been in some movies. And then obviously he did Spinal Tap, which kind of brought him to another, level of fame. But in 1984, he hosted an episode where I think Chaka Khan was a musical guest. And then later that season, Spinal Tap was the musical guest for, I forget who the host was. And then 10 years later, there was that weird SNL time where they were starting to phase out Farley, Sandler, Spade, Hartman, that kind of classic 80s, early 90s cast. They hadn't quite brought in your Will Ferrells, Chris Kattans, Jimmy Fallon, that late 90s, early 2000s cast. So they had a couple of weird years there where they brought in ringers like Chris Elliott, Michael McKean, Janine Garofalo, people who had kind of an established career outside of the show, which is very unusual for us. They like to bring in, right, exactly. And McKean spent a couple of years there. I think he was the Clinton impersonator after Hartman left. He did Howard Stern, you know, really kind of filled in that kind of Phil Hartman role as kind of just being that, that kind of everyman within the cast. But that is your answer, Michael McKean. Wow. Well done, gents.
South Carolina's own.
Lee, you or me, baby?
I'll do one. I've got a bit of a stinker here probably, so we'll let you close out with a good question. I got another boats question. Historical boats, the
Jesus
category.
Jesus Christ, you and fucking boats.
One. I know. I was just, you know, jumping off the last one. These are two boats in particular, though. I'm going to give you the names of them. I want you to tell me who owned them. The Grandma and the Pilar. The Grandma and the Pilar are two 20th century yachts manufactured by Wheeler Shipbuilding, then of Brooklyn, New York, that were famously owned by which two individuals, respectively?
I feel pretty good about the Pilar, Mark.
Okay. Who is that?
Ernest Hemingway. The reason is I just thought I remember that. Also, Pilar is the name of a character and for whom the bell tolls, which was...
I'm just going to give you that one right
there.
Okay,
yeah.
That's the one. Yep.
Okay.
You're right.
Well, that kind of shits all over my thing because I was thinking that it might be two people that were like Penn and Teller. Oh. You know what I mean? Like in Abbott and Costello.
Yeah. Teller's boat, very quiet, doesn't make any noise. Pens is just
fluctuating in weight and yelling all the time.
So now we have to figure out whose boat was Grandma. Is that correct?
The Grandma.
The Grandma.
Do you know any books that have a character named the Grandma? Who wrote Grandma's Boy?
Well, I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
Once I found that these two historical ships were made in the same place, I had to figure out if there was any connection between these two individuals. And Time Magazine did publish a picture of them hanging out together once. So there is one connection.
I'm feeling pretty good about this, Mark.
I like this guy.
I'm thinking it's Fidel Castro.
Interesting.
There's a famous photo of Hemingway and Castro, and certainly Hemingway spent time in Cuba. And while I can't specifically speak to the him having a ship called the Grandma.
The Abuelita.
Yeah. That, you know, Lee's clue about a picture of them being published together does seem to make sense to me. I mean, I know I'm thinking of, you know, I mean, Hemingway was good friends with Gary Cooper. He was good friends with, a bunch of people. So, you know, but something about the Castro seems maybe, I don't know.
Let's do it. Fuck it. It's on the water.
We're going to go with Fidel.
That's right.
Yeah.
Fidel Castro. That was the ship that he used to transport Mexican revolutionaries to Cuba to help with his revolution.
Wow. So
Che Guevara, actually, there's another famous photo of Castro and Guevara just hanging out on the bow of the ship.
On the Grandma. And,
yep. On the Grandma. It says Grandma behind them. There's no strong evidence that there was any other connection. I was like, did Hemingway recommend the Wheeler Shipbuilder to Castro or something like that? But there doesn't seem to be any indication that the only connection was that Hemingway once went to a fishing tournament that was held in Cuba that was named after him, which Fidel Castro obviously won, even though he was self-admitted novice Fisher.
Of course.
He won.
Wow. Interesting. And, all right.
Hemingway died just a year after that, basically. In 1960,
wow. Okay.
I think. Yep.
Man.
So they were not really friends, but they did have some association.
Got it. Okay. All right.
Gentlemen, mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a choice between three categories.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Technology, television, and books.
Hmm. Wow.
What are you thinking,
Lee? I wrote way too many questions.
I would say let's go with either TV or books. I feel like with our brain knowledge combined, we have the best chance out of those categories.
I'm feeling TV, I think.
Okay, let's go with TV. Yes.
From the man on the TV. In 1990, Jennifer Aniston appeared in what short-lived TV show adapted from a popular movie?
I know this.
I thought you might.
Let me throw a guess out there. Yeah. You can tell me if it aligns with your guess.
Yeah.
Is it Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure? There was a short-lived TV show based on that.
Yeah. Was that a cartoon or was that live action?
It was live action.
Live
action?
Really? Oh, wow.
Yep. They recast Bill and Ted.
Oh, God. Blasphemy. I was thinking, for as soon as he said, and I don't remember watching it, but Ferris Bueller's Day Off, I thought there was a short-lived Ferris Whoa. Bueller show. It might have even been called Ferris Bueller or something, not with Matthew Broderick, not with, I don't think, Alan Ruck or, you know, I don't mm-hmm. think any of the main, you know, people. But for some reason, I was like, yeah, Aniston was on that. I don't know. I didn't see the show, but that feels like something that I read somewhere.
I have no idea. I'm not sure if there was a Friends movie or if that show even debuted in 1990, but that's
no, Friends was until 94. I'm thinking of more 80s movies that were TV shows. There was a Brie Perry and the Henderson show. I don't think she was on that. There was, or I think that might've been actually after 90.
Did that have the guy from Night Court in it? Am I remembering that correctly? That also played Dave Barry.
Harry Anderson.
Maybe that's why I'm thinking of Harry.
I think so, yeah.
Harry Anderson and Harry and the Henderson.
Yeah. There was also an Uncle Buck show with Kevin Meaney, but I feel like that... I'm thinking Ferris Bueller.
Lee. Okay, I feel good about that. I would be interested in checking that out I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, but. Now that I say it, I'm like, even if we're wrong, I'd like to find it on, you know, Vimeo or whatever. But yes,
sounds about right, too.
Yeah, I think so. Where to go with Ferris Bueller?
Starring Charlie Schlatter as the main character, it was Ferris Bueller.
Yeah! Oh, yeah! Nice.
Bow, bow. Yes, it did last a whole season.
Oh, it did not, or it did last?
It did not last a whole season. It was canceled within its first season. A few months after its debut, there was no John Hughes. There was none of the. I don't think any of the main actors were used in it.
You just got to milk it till it's dry, though.
Yeah, man.
Movie, let's ruin it with a TV show.
The main character refers to the film and expresses his displeasure at Matthew Broderick portraying him, even going as far as destroying a life-size cardboard cutout of Broderick with a chainsaw.
I gotta see this. A chainsaw, you said?
A chainsaw, yes.
What? Sorry, I'm doing a Limp Bizkit thing.
It's set up to portray itself as being the real-life situations upon which the movie was based. That's pretty meta.
Interesting, yeah. Huh, you know, I had no idea. That is so fascinating, Mark.
Yeah.
It's funny to think, I would imagine at the time it got canceled as someone who's trying to, you know, whose career is starting out or whatever I'm doing. If you're on a show and it gets canceled, it's got to be the most devastating thing in the world. And it's crazy to think that it was canceled, you know, 90. And within 4 years, Jennifer Aniston was on the biggest new show of, I mean, it's just crazy. Like,
yeah,
how that goes.
For sure.
It's like Lisa Kudrow was originally on Frasier. She was cast as the Roz part on Frasier in the pilot, I think, or an early thing. It didn't work. She got fired. She was like, my career is over. And then I think like a couple months later, she landed on Friends, and it's truly like, oh wow, who knows?
Yeah. Oops.
Yeah. Oops. All Frasiers.
Oops, all Frasier. I'd be cool with that show. Or yeah, Oops, all Kudrow. I'd even watch that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But that's crazy. Man, I got to see this Ferris Bueller show now.
Yeah, we'll see if we can find a link to that and put that in the show notes. Jameson, thank you so much for joining us today on the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. It's been an absolute joy having you here.
Thank you, guys. I picked up some great new trivia questions. And I'll tell you what, as soon as this is done, I'm going to go look up some neoclassical architecture.
Now we're talking. Perfect. Is there anything that you want to plug, Jameson?
You can follow me on Twitter at Jameson Webb. You know, obviously, if you see me on TV, take a peek. But, you know, in the meantime, no, just follow me on Twitter.
That's great.
I guess that's really the big thing, right? That's all that matters.
And that's at Jameson Webb, two Bs?
Yes. JAMISONWEBB.
B.
Join us in the hashtag webheads.
Thank
We're all
you.
There.
Yes.
All us webheads are there.
Yes, the webhead fan base. but yeah, no, thanks so much for having me. It was a blast, and great to connect with you guys. And like I said, just share some factoids. Sling around some factoids.
Always.
We love it. We love it. Perfect. All right. That concludes this episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name is Quizmaster Lee. Thanks for listening. Join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No in several ways. The easiest, by sharing this episode on your social media accounts with your friends. You could also leave us a written review on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the podcast on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, and clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page.
Thank you to our Patreon supporters for helping us out with the show. Thanks to our quiz daddies, of course, Dylan, Tommy, and Tim. Our team captains, Gil.
It's Gil.
Kristen, Fletcher, Rachel, Aaron, and David Holbrook. Thanks to our proverbial lightkeepers, Spencer, Caitlin, Manu, Mo, Nina, Michael, Matthew, Luke, Marissa, Justin, Hank, Nicole, Cooper, Sean, Carly, Chris, Elise, Josh, E. Lucas. And thanks to our Rumble Snailskins, of course, Allison, Paige, Kenya, Jeff, Efren, Steven, Michael C.
Michael, catch Jameson on Jeopardy.
Michael J.
Michael Jeopardy is where to watch Jameson.
And Michael S.
Michael Space Force is another place you can see Jameson Webb on TV.
Oh, wow. What a buddy.
You'd like to write us with a rate my question or a miscorrection. You can do so at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Call us at 1-929-356-6966. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia. And on Twitter at No Non Trivia. We have a Facebook group you can join as well. Just go on Facebook and search for the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast to join us there. You can find me and Mark, not Jameson, though. Again, go to Twitter for that. And finally, don't forget to leave us a rating on your favorite podcast service. 5 stars only, please. Until next time, No Nonsense listeners, have a great week.